Hi there. This episode was brought to you by people like Marcus Cole, Zygmunt Brennan, Edward Thompson, Jordan Madej, and Ashton Donson. All of these people went to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and contributed to the network. That is a great way to help us continue to do shows like this. This special episode required some monetary input, and that came from you. Like, you helped make this. So once again, that is patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and thanks to everybody who has given so far.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are doing our special episode for the year, our topics episode. We are doing a revisit slash follow-up to the topic of arcades. People who have been listening for a long time or who have done kind of archive dives will remember that episode 31 was all about arcades.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah.
And now we're back. Doing this had made me realize, like, this probably doesn't have to be the last arcades episode we do either.
No.
We could do this, you know, every once in a while, because I still played three games, you know, like it's yeah. it's still going to be useful for the show, for this kind of thing. And like we, you know, like I said a bunch leading up to this, is that arcades are such a huge part of gaming history. Like, it's a weird thing just to leave them behind.
Absolutely.
It'd be like if we just didn't do Super Nintendo games at all.
Yeah.
You know, and then once a year we each picked three.
Very, chose them. Very strange. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, super, super excited to get into this, and it's going to be a different, you know, if we do this in the future, it'll be different than this one. This one is different than the last one. The episode 31 is mostly nostalgic. We talked about our childhood experiences with arcades, our arcade memories, and then also went and did some, because it was we recorded that around the same time we went to PRGE.
Yeah, it was the first PRGE.
Yeah,
that we did. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and it's been, you know, so it was about 6 years ago, and there's been a lot of arcade advancements, believe it or not.
Yeah. the scene has kind of changed, but I think, you know, more to the format of the show, our play for that was relatively unfocused. I mean, we took a recorder there. And we just kind of got progressively drunker and said, Burger Time's weird.
Yeah. It wasn't, we didn't really look at the games the same way that we look at games now.
Right.
So taking the opportunity to take arcade games and kind of give them that treatment, I think is worthwhile.
Yes. There. So what we have done is each of us have kind of gone to our own local arcades and picked three games a piece to kind of either beat or achieve some level of, if, you know, not mastery, but competency or fluency. Yeah.
Enough
fluency.
To learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To learn the games. Right. So we took three, we played each other's games, but not to completion.
Right.
So the other person doesn't just sit there, you know, as a lump and listen, you know, while the other one monologues.
Right.
And it's going to be kind of, you know, those classic kind of book report things. Think like our interactive fiction episode.
Right.
There's a couple big caveats at the front. That's worth, I guess there's three, because right. There's two of them in the notes, but there's one extra one. And the one that I want to add is just that this is not a comprehensive history of arcades. Like, there's probably a documentary.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And we talked about it a little bit in the last episode. We're talking about it a little bit last time, but as always with our topic stuff, this is a survey course. Like, we're not trying to be the be all end all in arcades. We not interview arcade experts.
There are better resources than us, and I don't think anybody wants us to say, like, back in the penny arcade days.
Yeah. You know, I don't, like, got a Billy Mitchell in my pocket. that's a catchphrase I'm working on. Do you like that character?
I do. I really like the I really just kind of the spin that you put on it.
Yeah, dude, it's just like, I don't have a Billy Mitchell in my pocket.
Yeah,
like, so, you know, just somebody like, hey man, do you want to play some Donkey Kong? I don't have a Billy Mitchell in my pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the emphasis on pocket.
In my you know? Pocket, especially.
My pocket?
Ooh, the pocket yeah. Mitchell.
Yeah, ooh, the... Gary and Brayton. That's the big thing is again, don't expect us to be comprehensive. The other thing is there's a couple big parts of arcades that we're not covering that we're not covering this episode.
Right. So pinball, huge part of arcades, right? We're saving that
especially
for
now.
Oh yeah, it's
pinball has never been bigger. It's weird. Yeah.
It is very strange. And I've been kind of like the past few times I've been to arcades, I have put aside a lot of time to play pinball. So like I'm really excited for when we eventually do that. Mm-hmm. Still very much a novice. I'm not very good at it, but I'm getting better at learning the appeal. That's just such a big topic, and the vocabulary for that is so specialized. Like that is over there in kind of its own corner for later.
Yeah, there's you know, specifically in Portland, it is home of the annual pin brawl, $1,000 pinball tournament thing, and there are every bar in town pretty much has to have a couple pinball tables to really get the appeal, you know, they're always busy.
Mm-hmm.
Huge pinball town. And like, I think it would be fun when we do that episode. Will did that, signed up for that tournament.
Uh-huh.
And I like, and he just, you know, lost in the first round because he's not one of these guys who has been mastering pinball his entire life.
Yeah. The way you described it, it sounded really miserable, or like he was especially miserable for that.
The tweeting was very funny. He like live tweeted the whole thing. Everyone should follow Will on Twitter. If you don't, he's at Plumber Duck. But I think it would be fun when we did that episode, if I got into pinball and felt like I was good at it at all.
Yeah.
I don't think it costs anything. So I would go there and stand in line and be part of that experience.
Hmm.
That'd be pretty funny. It'd be, you know, good story. But they assign you a table randomly.
Ooh.
So there's like one pinball table I'm good at. And if I didn't get that one, then I would definitely lose.
Well, you can't say there's one that I'm good at and then not identify what that is.
Oh, Theater of Magic.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
Pinball. Yeah, that's my favorite pinball table. It's the only one that I can succeed at. I don't know what it is, but just something about the geometry of that one makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I can actually kind of understand the branching goals and the like.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, pinball will be a whole episode, and that will be pretty fun. Until then, you should watch Special When Lit, the very good documentary about that.
Yes. The other kind of mainstay, like ticket games or redemption games, is what they're called. Things like Skee Ball or that one where you stop the light in time. We covered those in our, a little bit at least in our episode about Fun Centers. That is episode 58.
Yes. And similar to this, I feel like there's space to revisit. Like I don't want to go full on like Retronauts revisit the classics,
mm-hmm.
but like even though those games, I think it would be fun to do. Like I'm a big dork for carnival games.
Oh yeah.
And like the specific scams within. I would love to do an episode on carnival games, man. Like,
oh yeah,
we each go to like a fair,
mm-hmm.
and then just go and see how rigged they are and then talk about how they rig them. Like that would be extremely fun to me.
Oh yeah. That would need to be like an embedded kind of thing where we would really just kind of like, I think we would need to like insinuate our way into carny culture.
Ooh, I didn't even think about learning how to set up the cheats.
Yeah.
What if we won? What if we're successful? We'd be fucked. Like it's a fun joke, but what if it worked?
I don't know.
Like I don't want to tour with a bunch of carnies. I can't get Starla pregnant. We're too young. Like,
I don't know. You might like it.
I might like it. It's true. I might like Little Scout and Rumor,
yeah.
whichever one came out first of the kids that we would have.
Yeah.
I think that would be, when you say embedded, like learning from the carnies, mm-hmm. and I just want to get some real mean side eyes from people who can't answer questions and refer me to like Big Top Entertainment LLC or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Like if you just walked up and said, hey, what's the angle on this, I'm sure you would be, you know,
oh my god, like rolled.
Yeah.
taken behind a corn dog and beaten the shit out of. I would welcome that sweet embrace just for the just to learn a little bit about, you know, carny code and stuff.
Yeah, I'd be battered and feathered.
Yeah. I'll become a to like the corn dog equivalent of tarred and feathered.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, like a, you know, like a corn dog with feathers. Everyone's yeah. dream.
Yeah, and less people think that I'm being classist with that. I worked a lot of kind of carnival, not carnival, but like concession trailers and stuff when I was young.
Yeah. And it, yeah, I also don't want to sound classist against carnies.
Yeah.
It is just, it is a fun stereotype.
Yeah.
That is what that, you know.
but now we're virtue signaling and people get angry about that.
Yeah, someone's going to be angry regardless. Just refer to the Simpsons episode with Ernest on it.
Yeah, that's no good.
That's pretty much where I land on it.
Yeah. So on to kind of some general talking points about this. Like we said, we're not going to be a comprehensive source for this kind of stuff. You know, we can really only speak about our experience. When we left this in 2012, kind of the prevailing narrative was that American arcades dead and in the ground for a very, very long time, right?
Yeah. Yep. So there would be, if you wanted to, you know, the idea of just like a place you go to, like an arcade, you know, in a mall or just kind of a dedicated building, it was getting kind of outmoded.
Yeah.
You might find arcade games just kind of in the corners of bars or like in a mall. Like I've seen like a Area 51 machine just freestanding in a mall.
Yeah. Like before. Like the, that's where the wheel fell off the dolly. And it's like, yeah, well, I guess that's where this lives now.
This lives here now. And there's probably some comorbidity with the dying of malls.
Oh,
with dying of arcades too. Like those are probably related in some ways. There were still arcade games that were being made and that were big for bars, but it was the very specific subgenres of Golden Tee and Buck Hunter.
Yeah.
So we got those things. And man, if you ever, like, I've sat down and watched like a Buck Hunter attract mode for a long time in a bar before.
Yeah.
And those games start getting wild.
A lot there's like zombie deer and
tons of zombies, tons of like, there's a mode in that where you're super shrunk down and you're hunting roaches in a kitchen as like a tiny little hunter.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Like, this is very funny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're a whole thing, but they're just gun games. I have no idea why those took off like that.
Yeah. I can make some stereotypes about like why that would be in a BW3. Like, oh, I'm a bro. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to do hunting like my dad did, except here. Yeah.
I guess prior to that, there was a lot of like that police trainer game.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's around. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. There were also things like GameWorks. Again, rest in peace. I've not seen a GameWorks in like a decade. But then like Dave and Buster's, right? Like sure. The like arcade games have been around, but like they had to go to these specialized kind of places like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which are fine.
Yeah.
Like, I won't turn my nose up at a Dave and Buster's. I don't think I think it's not the best arcade drinking experience.
Right.
But, it's not too bad. Speaking of, those started coming around like a specific kind of barcade, that portmanteau that was made to be, it feels like it came with the universe, you know, finally actually did come out. The first one dedicated exclusively to that opened in the late 90s in Melbourne. It was called Barcode. One letter off, and it became this kind of minor chain of barcode brand barcades.
Yes. And stateside here, you know, the bar/arcade kind of started rising here in the aughts, right? So the actual like barcade, like that is a genericized term now, at least in the way that I use it, in the way that a lot of other people talk. Like barcade as a place, it opened up in Brooklyn in 2004.
Yeah. Yep. And then we talked about a lot in the last episode that we did on arcades 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the hometown one here in Portland is Ground Control that opened in 1999 and then became a full service bar in 2011. And I've referenced this many times, but that's, you know, I moved out here about 10 years ago. So I was here, you know, right when it was a bar, and it initially started and it was an arcade bar music venue for bands and classic game. Sales like store. It was four things at once.
It's a very confused establishment.
It was very confusing, but it was very much like me. You know, I could go in there and like they had all these posters from when like the mini bosses had played there and shit, and I was like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then shortly after I moved here, they stopped having live bands and moved over to DJs, and then they stopped selling games,
right?
And it just became they added food that no one should eat.
Right.
Like it
speaking like, of concession food, like it's fine, but it's just like, here's Princess Peach's
pretzel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, here's Princess Peach's pretzel. You know, it's a pretzel.
Yeah.
It's a big it's a big softy. You take a big bite into this big softy and you got some frosting dipping mustard in order to make it Princess Peachy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And it's all fine if you were hungry and drunk in an arcade, but it felt like a huge, you know, setback. in terms of features of that establishment.
Right. But it's kind of interesting how like these barcades, you know, they started on the coast, or we have these big ones that were, you know, at either side. I think Galloping Ghost is, you know, over there in Chicago, but like these ones are everywhere now. And like just to speak to how prolific they are, we have two here in Cincinnati. There's that Mark Twain quote, like, when the world ends, I hope I'm in Cincinnati, so it'll be 10 years behind. You know? But like, yeah, no, we've got two of them here. There's actually a bar slash arcade in Galleon, Ohio, where my brother lives. Like
That's
this
fascinating, yeah.
tiny ass town that has a bar slash arcade. It's not a very good one, but they serve beer and there are arcade games there.
The and when we, you know, when we did our live show in Milwaukee, it was like, hey, let's find a barcade for the meetup. Like, it's easy to do. You know, such things are just extant. In most major cities. In Portland now, there's two major ones, and then there's a tiny one. I discovered a tiny one just out of nowhere, this little hole in the wall, and it's like seven games and a little like shitty, like your super dingy bar. And I'm like, this is, you know, I can still get down with this,
Oh, for
you know,
sure.
as a thing. Like, I'd rather there be arcade machines than not at any place.
Yeah,
Hospital?
what's the tiny one called?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's on it's right across the street from the bowling alley that also has a barcade in it. So I, you know, so I guess there's, you know, there's another small one there. It has more like ticket games, but.
So that's part of one of these things that kind of worries me about this, is that they are so prolific that there is inevitably going to be a contraction, right? Like
So I
as
think, yes, but the ones that kind of operate as bars first have the same kind of like solubility as a bar,
Right.
you know? So like if, so I was talking to somebody, I was talking to a bartender, and so this is anecdotal as hell,
Right.
but I was talking to a bartender, and it was interesting because he was talking about lotto games, because gambling is legal in Oregon, and he was like, yeah, we wouldn't be able to still be a bar if it wasn't for those, you know, like we made like something like $100,000 in profit from those,
Holy shit.
and these barcades, because they do sometimes have kids in them, they don't have gambling. It's not like there's like the sad arcade in the back with the bad games that cost a lot of money. So I wonder if that's just a way of like the economic realities, at least in this town, of running a bar are such that it doesn't quite get you there and you need something extra. And the arcades have to make as much money as, you know, as that gambling does. So in that case, I could see, you know, there just being this contraction, but it still feels like most of the time when I come into one of these, like that one that's like the little shack. If that was going to be a successful dive bar, the little arcade machines can only probably help it. You know, it still had places to sit and drink and cheap beer. You know, it still functioned as a bar.
So like maybe I'm thinking more about where they're at here, right? Because you know we do have two of them. That seems like way too many barcades for a market like Cincinnati. Like Cincinnati isn't like, you know, the metro area is not that much smaller than Portland. But it's just kind of like a different kind of place, right? And both of the bar slash arcades, I only went to one for this, but both of them work the same way. As long as you buy a drink, you play for free.
Interesting. Yeah, that is a different kind of economic model. And then the cost are you're not taking in money with that, but then the cost is exclusively upkeep and maintenance.
Which they
So,
do. Like, and
yeah.
that is one of the things that is really, really nice about these, is like all the establishments that I've been to have kind of really taken pride in keeping these machines functional and nice looking.
So that's an in you know not a not inconsiderable cost, I'm sure. So it's yeah, the realities of that are pretty interesting, having a free play kind of model. So it's cool that they're popular. I like that they're popular. I like that I can go into any city and find a barcade. It is those two things work really, really well together.
Oh, for sure,
Like,
yeah.
I like having a drink and playing arcade games.
Yep.
Like it's really well suited. I don't really like drinking and playing regular video games
Right,
very
right.
much. Like I had some drinks last night and I came home and I was like, I'm gonna play some God of Dad. And I popped in my God of Dad and it was like still fun, but I was just like, oh, this is demanding some kind of attention, even just in purely physical terms that I'm not really capable of at my level of inebriation. But arcade games, I can always throw in a quarter to round that up. You know, like, it doesn't really matter if I stop paying attention for a moment and like die.
Right.
Because it just costs a quarter to make up for that mistake. It's a weird, it's a way, it's like selling sobriety one quarter at a time.
Yeah.
You know, so selling a sober performance.
Yeah. You know? That's, so that's a very funny way to put that. No, like, it really does. It does go well. And there's something about it that is like, oh, I've just kind of gone to arcades my entire life and they've always been accompanied, you know, by some kind of vice or another. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, back in the day, it was like you're at a birthday party and you've had like sugary drinks or whatever. Just replace sugar with alcohol. And it's kind of the same deal.
Kids used to smoke outside the arcades that like I went to when I was younger.
Oh, yeah.
Like all the time. And a lot of times, though, the one my arcade that I went to with my dad that I talked about in the last episode, Gala West,
mm-hmm.
Was attached to a bowling alley and had a bar there. So like you had like teens, you know, trying to get adults to buy them drinks and shit, too. So like,
yeah.
That CD vice thing, but now it is celebratory
mm-hmm.
in a weird way. It doesn't, there's nothing CD about it. It feels like.
Right. Yeah. You know, just a new, it is no more risky than just, you know, any kind of drinking at a bar. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, they do go very well together because also it is a very kind of social occasion. I felt very strange going to these arcades and, you know, especially the bar arcade alone. Standing there with my gin and tonic, like, hi, I'm here alone drinking and beating the Avengers. My name's Cole.
I legit like actually felt pretty good about that.
Oh yeah.
Like, yeah, I was having a good time specifically going alone because when I go with people, you can, it's one of those social things where you like you hang out and talk for a little while and then you kind of separate if you're not going to play this, you know, two-player games.
Right.
You know, and then you kind of wander back together and it's like fun to go in an arcade with people, but it was more just like, I'm here for business. I want to soak in this ambience, drink, and then and play through this game. And then people would kind of wade in and join me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I played through one of my games, the beat 'em up, and for portions of it, I had people along on the journey. It was like nice. Journey. You know, it was like Journey, but in real life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's the guy with the backwards baseball hat and the mustache.
Oh,
you were my black cat for, you know, a stage.
Yeah. Well, I was a fucking weirdo and I started my arcade adventure at like 11 a.m.
That would have been a way to do it, too. I thought I considered that as well. Like, I need to do this during the day.
Yeah. Like I got to the bar/arcade at 4 that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, I have it in the notes here that, like, you know, maybe I'm projecting my own experience on this, but looking around, you know, the clientele at these, you know, barcades are generally around my age or maybe slightly older, right? And it's not unreasonable to think that all these other people had a very similar experience. Like, oh, like we were all going to arcades when they crashed in the 90s, and
yeah.
We're just kind of picking this back up at a different later point in our lives. When mm-hmm. maybe a decade ago, if we were 10 years older, to get this experience, we would have to be rich, own a home, and buy one of these cabinets off of eBay.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true. And mostly I think about that because of how often or how few kids I see.
Yeah.
At these, even during like daytime hours, like
yeah.
Every once in a while there will be kids at one of the arcade, you know, barcades here during the day, but it's pretty rare. You know, and it's like two dads bringing one kid.
Right.
You know, it's like the ratio of people my age who are there to play old games versus the, you know, you get the sense that they're projecting some enjoyment onto the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a nickel arcade that's almost all ticket games here that is lousy with kids 24/7.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, so there's a place for that here, but it's not a barcade.
Right.
You know, so I think that's true. And it makes me hope that this continues. Like, I want like senior barcades.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be rad. Like yep. A room in the back for Nasta and shit.
Oh yeah, it's all cocktail machines, so we can sit down and play. Yeah,
that'd be. And I pretty much want to sit down and play every arcade game.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Give me one of those. Give me a tall stool.
Oh yeah, God, the stool is the best. I just got an adjustable standing desk, and I'm in the market for a good stool.
Yeah. I like a stool out in public, and at home, like I tend to like a back support for a chair, but in public. Like a stool for an arcade kind of thing, because you have to hunch over a little bit anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's extremely nice.
Yeah.
So these are rooms, you know, dark rooms crowded with mostly men in their mid 30s. barcades get crowded and full of like rousing bros a lot. Like, this is a different kind of environment than it
Yes.
used to be at arcades when we were young, where mostly the sound was just kind of like cool lasers and darkness and mystery. Now it is adding this bar and adding these 30 somethings to this experience has made it different. And they can get crowded and kind of bro-y, at least in this town. And that can be kind of a bummer.
Yeah, the mix, at least at 16-bit in Cincinnati here, when I went, it was kind of early on in the day. It was more equitable. Like there were definitely a lot more women than I think you're experiencing out there.
It varied for me. Like there were definitely women who were there, but it was just like I guess the women weren't being obnoxious. So when I say it was bro-y, I'm specifically like the men who are extremely loud, playing the NFL Blitz game, that I couldn't politely pass by. And the women were there just playing video games like normal people. So,
So all the obnoxiosity was coming from the dudes.
yeah, that's but it, that that's kind of a new thing. I don't remember that from, when I went to arcades as a kid. It was like just like head down, concentrate. Like you would talk, and you would like, I don't think I've ever had more respect in my life or acted more respectfully than watching an older kid play an arcade game. That is the most subservient and like respectful as I've ever been. Like, I need to sit here and be quiet. My hands stay behind my back. I don't say anything unless I disrupt his concentration.
I don't want to get in his space. I don't want to make the hairs on the back of his neck stand up,
He
you
doesn't
know?
even need to know I'm here. I just need to watch him play Street Fighter, and that's me.
I need to watch him because he has reached a level in this game that I've not gotten to before.
Perhaps I can learn something if I shut up, keep my eyes open, my mouth shut.
And
And
that doesn't apply at any other point in my
no,
life.
yeah, I've never done that again, and I never will. I just but at the time, and this is just so different than that because it has that barness to it, where they're just kind of rousing. It's also no longer the kind of AV experience that I remember. Like the they all kind of tend to model themselves after old arcades, I feel like, in terms of visuals. Is 16-bit the one that I've been to in
Yeah,
Cincinnati?
16-bit was the one that we had the
The
meetup
meetup.
at in 2015, but before we did the show up in Kosai.
The that one does as well, where it does kind of model itself. It's all muted colors, which I mean you have in a bar, right? But like tends to be like dark colors. If you have co other colors, they tend to be like neon. There's an 80s kind of aesthetic to some of it. They kind of look like arcades, but the audio is now has to toe the line with the bar side of things. And that means lots of DJs, and that bums me the fuck out. I'd be on the edge of like just being like, I don't like DJs at all. I don't do it. Are DJs good?
I'm comfortable with that.
I feel kind of comfortable with it too, and I feel bad. I know a couple DJs that seem like they're perfectly nice people, but man, I could definitely leave a DJ, I am. And it just feel like these DJs should be playing like the Portal 2 soundtrack. Like it's but instead it's not that. Like it's a lot of times at the ones in Portland, like it's just kind of EDM, stuff and not super exciting EDM. And then sometimes it's just kind of a general nerd mix, which we experience at PRGE every year.
I think that Quarter World has kind of the right idea with that, which is, they've got Tessie, they've got the Tesla coil that they do those performances every once in a while. And in that one room, like off in the lounge at the side, they just have long plays going or speed
Yeah, but
runs, right?
well, they don't have the audio from those playing.
Oh, I thought they did.
No. It's cool that you can watch them. Like that's great, actually. Like the playing long plays or playing speed runs is very cool, but they don't have the audio. The audio in that place is more just like a bar. Like they don't tend to have DJs, even though they do have some nights. Ground Control is way worse about DJs. And just the I went to for this the session, I went to Ground Control twice and Quarter World once. I ended up splitting up over three sessions just because I was being inefficient. And one night I got some stummies and had to go home. But the they just had both nights at Ground Control, they had DJs who were just playing really generic techno music from a little booth. And I was just like, nobody's really vibing on this. I feel like I'm not the only person in this room who wishes this wasn't.
I get super cranky whenever music is in the foreground anyway, because like if I'm in a social kind of place, I want to talk. And music kind of gets in the way. I just kind of accept that as me being an old man, you know, in a slightly younger man's body. but definitely, like a DJ, a DJ's presence definitely asserts itself in a way that just like a well put together mix.
It doesn't. You know, right. Part of it is just the music being in the foreground. Part of it is just it wishing it was better music. Mm-hmm. And the third part of it is just like, I really enjoy the din of an arcade.
Oh yeah.
Like this could just be the sounds of these games all have music, man. Mm-hmm. Like you're DJing in a room full of stereos playing songs.
Yeah. Well, I opened this episode with some of that arcade ambiance from that great YouTube channel.
Like... Yeah. Yeah. It's a great thing. Like I like that noise and just having this just fucking generic techno music over it. It was a real bummer to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and of course I was a weirdo being there alone drinking. So like maybe I was just hypersensitive to it. So
yeah.
And the other thing, as I mentioned, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but drinking as you play changes the experience a lot in a way that I think is actually greatly beneficial to arcade games.
Yeah.
One of the things that I realized, you know, we each did three arcade games, and I'm still enough me to be like, oh, this is cheap and shitty and just wants my quarter. So mm-hmm. like this is bad design. Yeah. It's hard to care when you've had two or three drinks, mm-hmm. though. You know, I just get to see some colors, you know, marry me with my money. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and that becomes what you do if you've had a couple of drinks. So I think drinks actually really help make arcade games better.
Right. It's it is two fun activities that kind of prop each other up.
Yes.
I feel very strange calling just the act of drinking alcohol an activity, but you know what
sure.
I mean.
Sure. Like, it's one of your favorite hobbies.
But I mean, based on the number of hours that I spend doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got 2,000 hours in The Binding of Isaac. You've got how many thousand hours in the drinking of coal?
Yeah.
The,
yeah. No, it definitely is a good thing. And it's very fun to see the way, you know, this is like boring. It's almost like this old house, but it's fun to see the way that they changed the design of the arcade to accommodate that. Just mm-hmm. the number of like, you know, high top tables that they have, you know, put in between the machines. Like I love that ground control has the like the little wire cup holders. Drink.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so much so that when you get to a machine without one, it's a real pain in the ass.
It really is.
Yeah. I need something to do with this, and you don't want me to put them on top of the arcade.
No. I mean, like none of us want that to happen. But you're kind of making the wrong thing to do the easiest thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, then you get the gigantic six-person X-Men machine, which is just begging to have a drink put on it.
Yeah, and it has drink slots, but only drink slots for four drinks.
Now, come on.
So if you brought a whole crew,
well, you know, it's designated drivers.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I said juicy cup. I meant sippy cup.
Oh yeah.
But this changes things a lot. Changes the experience in ways that are not necessarily obvious. Like, you know, you can just drinking video games, it's great together. But it actually really suits itself well to arcade machine arcade games, partly because of the types of games
mm-hmm.
that are kind of emphasized with the barcade.
Yeah.
So a bar is a social place. You know, it's a place where you go to socialize. So barcades have a greater preponderance of multiplayer games.
Yep.
I find than the arcade games of my youth, like, and certain kind of games have kind of died, like the arcade platformer, you know, which is there's not a whole lot of those, but those exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have your Ghouls of Ghosts and stuff like that. Your Willow arcade game. The I'm gonna see if I can get every that as a reference in for the rest of the year in every episode.
Okay, cool.
I bet you I can.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna try. Like I can't stop you. I can do is just like be indifferent to it and not encourage it.
Yeah, if you start beeping it out, I'm gonna fucking come to your house and wreck you.
I wouldn't do that to you, man.
I know. You wouldn't do that to me. You wouldn't do it to Willow Offgood. Don't do it for Laura Dannon. But I don't see even those games that are popular. Like I don't see a single player kind of side scroller game, a single player experience type game
right.
very often at these arcades.
No. And when you do, they're, you know, it's something like Frogger or even Dig Dug, where it is, you know, kind of meant to be played in short bursts for score.
Yes.
Oftentimes like a spectator. Right.
Yep. And even and those are just like kind of classic arcade ass arcade games.
Yeah.
You know, so like those are going to you can't really do an arcade without Miss Pac-Man,
mm-hmm.
you know, what have you. So those are always going to be there. But there is just does feel an emphasis. I feel like there's an emphasis on those. So you end up with, you know, when I went to arcades in my youth, like, yes, there were a lot of beat 'em ups. Now, you know, it by volume, it feels like these arcades are like 15 to 20% beat 'em up.
Yeah, beat 'em up, yeah. Fighting game, like Ungames. You know, you get your House of the Dead. Like those are the those feel like custom made for like, oh, we just have a bunch of people and this is meant to be a bonding experience kind of thing, right?
Yes, which is great. Mm-hmm. That's really fun. And again, you have that journey experience where people come and just join you for a moment, or you can sit down with people and be like, hey, we both got $5. Let's beat, you know, Sunset Riders.
Yeah.
And that can be really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There are games you play for score, and there are games you play for, you know, to accomplish a goal, usually to beat it. Like beat 'em ups have scores, but everybody is pumping quarters in order to get to the end.
Yes.
To see credits, to fight more bosses.
Yeah. And arcades are, this is kind of an interesting, you know, this exists on the home market or with console games and PC games, but not nearly as much.
Right.
This is kind of, having this kind of tension between these two things is one of the defining features of arcade games in general.
Right.
Is that arcade games can be played for both. And it's not just a question of vintage, you know, which is when we talk about high score games, that's usually what we're talking about. It's like, oh, this came out when that was the only metric. So, you know, it's really focused on that. New games come out in which score is a thing.
It's like racing games, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, where that, like, that can be for progress, but can also be for score. Pac-Man Championship Edition, which is about, you know, not necessarily about progress, but it's about, and then score, but it's about, like, getting more points than your opponent.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
it's about experience. Just destroying the other players.
Yes, like in a competitive way that doesn't involve getting to a goal.
Right.
You know, like a standardized goal in the same way that, like, a beat-em-up does. So those are the kind of the two different types of experiences you have at an arcade, like the two different setups. Whereas in the home, you know, on a home console or playing at home, games are much more goal focused.
Yeah.
Like you have your Geometry Wars and the like, but most games are get to the end of this.
Yeah.
There's still fighting games. There's still Overwatch. There's games where that's not true, but the vast majority are goal focused.
Yes. And here is a supercut of every time on a Duck Feet show, we said, oh, they're trying to motivate me with score, but that doesn't work for me.
Yes. And a spoiler is, like, I went into this arcade thing and played a game that only works that way, and it still didn't quite work for me.
Right,
like, I
right.
tried to, you know, I gave it the honest effort, but that just, it's very hard for that to be a factor.
Yeah, yeah. Like, for me, you know, speaking personally, like, getting good at a game or playing for score, like, that is a side effect of just kind of trying to get the most time out of one quarter, right? Like it is, you know, we talked about this in the first episode, in the first arcade episode, but like, you know, stretching a quarter is definitely something you had to get good at when you were a kid and you had like $5 from your dad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And now that quarters are relatively plentiful, that's less of a motivation, but it's, you bring it yourself.
Yes.
The same way you would with a score motivation. Like I just kind of want bragging rights.
Yeah.
For the game of mine that I played that was score based, I lost my piece of paper that I wrote down my score.
Oh, fun.
I feel really shitty about it. Like, I think I washed it, but it never, like, there was some schmutz that was in the dryer, but I wasn't readable or recognizable. So I'm sad.
Do you remember the order of magnitude?
Not really. Cause yeah. It's got that pinball thing where everything's got like a bunch of zeros on it.
Yeah,
but it just kind of how much I favor goal based games. I remember what level I got up to.
Oh yeah.
You know, so it's like that part that makes sense to me, you know, knowing what score I got, even though I was playing for score, remembering the level makes sense to me.
Did, we're talking about Dig Dug. Did you place,
yeah.
Did you place on the,
oh yeah.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. They reset those with some regularity. Like I was number one, like near the end of my time pretty easily. Cause nobody else was just like sitting down, like nobody else put, you know, $9 into Dig Dug. So right. It's the, you know, it was me. So, you know, GLB was on there.
So I talked about barcades taking care of this stuff and keeping their machines up. That is remarkable given that you have people drinking, which makes, you know, can make them angry, make them spilly, all those kind of things. And also kind of, you know, kind of remarkable because, you know, yeah, you've got the games that have the joystick and buttons, but like, you know, we need to talk about the physicality of these things. You know, I didn't just play the three games that we talked about. Like I saw Silent Scope and it's working. So I'm definitely going to sit there and play Silent Scope because that is just a remarkable piece of interface design. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is one of the big things that still recommend an arcade, you know, to you. And it's interesting that you can see those movements. It reminds me of what happens with theaters with like 3D or IMAX or like Super Scopo Vision and things like that, where they're trying to get people into the theater because there's less of a reason less things that demarcate it, you can see that having happened in arcades too.
Yeah.
You know, as the home console market grew and like, oh, I can play a really excellent version of Donkey Kong at home. Well, then we need some racing games.
Yeah.
Because you probably don't have room for a fake cockpit at home. You know, like how's your space for roll cages? Not great. You know, so come here and play this.
Yeah.
And that is one of the most fun parts of arcades.
Yeah.
You know, there's just like going in like Silent Scope. I love Silent Scope. I'll play Silent Scope. I will play, you know, I like racing games. I'm not the biggest racing game fan,
mm-hmm.
but I will always play a racing game at an arcade.
Oh yeah.
No matter what. Like I want to sit down and pretend to drive.
Like even like, you know, I sat down, I did several rounds of Daytona USA because even though that's not an amazing game, it's one that I have a tremendous amount of nostalgia for.
Yeah. When I went into Quarter World, I lucked out because the forever popular Mario Kart machines were not occupied.
Oh dang.
So I played a lot of Mario Kart, and it's the second one, it's the new one.
Okay.
That includes the first one has Pac-Man, the second one has the Taiko drum.
Oh, nice.
A little character. It's real cute.
Everybody's favorite mascot, the Taiko drum guy.
Yeah, the Taiko drum from Namco. it's extremely cute. And it's just like this is a really fun
mm-hmm.
arcade game. You know, it feels a little bit like Mario Kart.
Yeah.
And it was just I just wanted to sit down and see those colors and lights and such
mm-hmm.
In a way that you can't at home, even though, you know, Mario Kart 8 is one of the most beautiful games ever made.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Speaking of beautiful, like I was real bummed out. None of the arcades I went to had any vector games. Like there wasn't a Tempest machine out. I think even the Star Wars game, that wasn't a vector version. That was like some kind of like weird rasterized one.
I played a lot of Tempest.
Yeah.
I was leaning towards doing Tempest as my old game
mm-hmm.
For this, but I found Tempest too hard.
Yeah.
I can't, the Tempest, like I didn't play enough of it to say like this is bad, but the way that I'd only played Tempest a little bit, like a quarter at a time before,
right.
and mostly just like wanted to watch it. But the way the little spider things get up to the top and then you have to smart bomb.
Uh-huh.
You're way away from them sucks.
Yeah.
And it happens real quick. It's like level 4. Or 5 when those things pop up. I played a lot of Tempest. Like I love Tempest.
Mm-hmm.
I love vector games. I would love to get a Vectrex.
Yeah.
Just for home. Like, oh my God. finally something beautiful enough to be a centerpiece at a wedding.
You know? Yeah, that instead of a cake.
Yeah, just like everyone come admire a slice of the Vectrex instead of eating anything.
Yeah.
Get out. But yeah, there's a lot of those like just beautiful interface things. Pinball's in that category too, obviously.
Mm.
You know, beautiful and strange interfaces.
Yeah.
You just can't get it home. One of the things about barcades too is that there has been because they've come back, there are like these kind of prestige machines, which is the term I used for them. I don't know what else to call them. But these gigantic, so like Pac-Man versus mode would be one. They're in Quarter World. There is the world's largest Pac-Man, which is this gigantic LED Pac-Man that takes up this, you know, big 9-foot wall. And there is a version of Space Invaders that you control with two turret guns.
Holy shit.
Space Invaders. And it's fun as hell.
Huh.
It's all, you know, again, it's set up as this... what's the word I just used for the Pac-Man one? What is that? LCD,
mm-hmm.
like you know, LCD lights that come out from it, and it's just beautiful and huge and cost a dollar and is worth it.
Is like another word for these might even be like installations, almost.
Yeah.
Right. Like not like a GameWorks or whatever, whereas like VR or that one shitty game that you strap in. That I got stuck on that like raises you up and down like multiple floors.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like a little 12-year-old kid stranded 3 floors up. Help. but like installation games almost. Yeah.
Well, like some of them too, but I would also put something like Killer Queen in this situation. You know, this like 5 versus 5, you know, it's still just using the language of an arcade cabinet. It's
mm-hmm.
still joysticks and screens, but it takes up a lot of space and it's like a bespoke, unique kind of thing that only came about because of the rise of arcades.
Yes.
So that's the grander kind of point of this is that, you know, arcades always have a reason to visit them, even if you just like video games, because you can get unique experiences
mm-hmm.
and they're coming out with more.
Yeah.
You know,
something I noticed that really stuck out, at a couple of the places that I went to were like, they had several cabinets that just had like a PS4 inside of them. Like it was obviously built you know, to house and play this particular game. I'm referring specifically to
Marvel vs. Capcom or something.
Oh, like Dive Kick and Windjammers.
Oh, gotcha. That's pretty rad. Yeah, that has not, we do not have that going on here.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you see those and it's like, I have no idea who manufactured this, who built it, but like, this is made for Windjammers.
Yeah. I've seen those before. Mm-hmm. We don't have any here, but those are neat. And I think that's actually like a really smart idea. I think you could make a really fun barcade if you made exclusively those with indie games. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to go to a barcade and just play Nidhogg against strangers, and that would be amazing.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, two-player Jamestown and shit.
That would be very good, yeah.
That's a great idea. Like, indie arcade is a really fun idea.
Yeah, give me like a Play Choice 10, but with just like, oh, just give me like a Devolver machine. Like, oh, yeah, here's loot browsers. Awesome.
Like, a Devolver arcade would be really cool.
Yeah.
Give me a chance. I've never played co-op Gungeon, but give me a chance to do so. I beat the optional boss in Gungeon.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. I got down to the hidden floor, and first tried. Nice. I had an extremely lucky run.
Yeah.
So I'm close to being able to put that game away as being like, okay, I'm good at this roguelike as well. roguelite, and now I can move on.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I like Gungeon a lot, but I'm terrible at it. So I don't know that I'm ever gonna get there.
It's a weird thing where, like, because of my unique sickness, I'm drawn to talk about it because I spent a lot of time on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be work.
Right.
Because I'm sick. I'm a sick boy. But I had a very similar experience where, like, it's a weird thing where, like, getting, you know, level one Gungeon is really, really hard to get past. And then level two Gungeon lasts forever. Like, you spend a lot of time, like, pretty good. Like, if you get past that initial hump, you'll spend a lot of time getting to, like, floors 4 and 5 and dying there.
Yeah.
A long time. And then once you get past that, then it gets hard again, you know, and then those are kind of the three stages, but it's not even.
Right.
Yeah, game has a lot of problems, and as much as I like it, and that's one of them, is just that it is too hard up front and too hard in the end.
Yeah. Well, also, it feels very awkward to control if you play it on Switch in portable mode. Like, it depends on the triggers too much.
Oh, I mean, that's how I play it. I got very used to it.
Yeah.
So, this is not a Gungeon show. I just needed to brag about that because it was extremely difficult to get there.
Yeah.
And he's a really tough boss.
Congratulations.
Thanks, buddy. But I would love to play Gungeon in the arcade.
Yeah.
With two sticks. Yeah, you know, with
oh,
triggers.
Yeah.
Just thumbsticks on, that'd be great.
Yeah, thumbsticks are like a foot pedal to do the dodge roll.
Foot pedal would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't give me that that dial. I don't like the that dial.
Oh, I like the dial. Okay.
It just doesn't it's not precise enough. It feels cool. I like the novelty of it, but I don't think it's precise enough.
Yeah.
Same thing with trackballs. Not into trackball either.
Oh, I love trackballs. You're crazy.
Are you successful with them?
Yeah.
I don't think they're good to play with.
Yeah, like Missile Command or Marble Madness.
Yeah, I mean, Marble Madness a little bit, and the Marble Madness that has the like the mechanics.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, that I don't think that those would never like that ever took off, but they made a version of it with that.
It's super rare because they break all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge upkeep thing, but like that's a cool idea to me, and I like the idea.
Yeah,
and Missile Command like a little bit, but like I most of my memory is trying to play like Axelay or like you know, Breakout essentially with them, and that's not fun.
Yeah,
like it's just not precise enough.
Yeah, Breakout definitely suffers from a trackball. Arkanoid had the right idea. Like, I think that dial is one of the best feeling pieces of interface.
I don't really like the dial in Arkanoid either.
Jesus,
it's too touchy.
Yeah,
like you know, it's hard to stop.
Yeah, I just it feels, I don't know, like it feels very intuitive to me. Even when I was a super young kid, my grandpa from South Carolina, when he would come to stay, he would stay at like a particular Comfort Inn that had like a really big pool, and alongside the pool was this, you know, like a couple of arcade machines. A lot of them changed, but Arkanoid always remained the same. So imagine these, you know, little kids getting out and going out to play Arkanoid with wet hands and wet feet and just getting zapped while they touch the machine. So even being zapped, I still felt like that was an adequate and I would say exceptional control input. And you are an insane man.
Arkanoid was on my short list of things I was considering for one of my picks, and I just couldn't succeed at it. And if you give me a controller, like NES Arkanoid, I'm very good at.
Oh, weird.
Like I'm actually good at Arkanoid. I just can't do a touch that touchy of an interface. But I'm also, I turn down mouse sensitivity on like everything.
Okay.
Down to almost its lowest. Like I don't want a sensitive control.
Yeah.
Like I need it to be able to push it.
Yeah. Like, so. the momentum of the spin on the dial matches the momentum of the paddle in a way that is really satisfying for me. And like a console or joystick based, you know, breakout or Arkanoid style thing just doesn't let you manage that momentum and track the ball quickly enough.
What would maybe do it for me is if the dial, when your paddle hit the wall, mm-hmm. if the dial stopped.
Okay.
Because I can lose my 0 point is what's happening.
Okay.
Like I turn, my paddle hits the wall. I continue to go right
mm-hmm.
on the dial, and then I lose my like positioning, my like hand positioning.
Right. So you have to do a reset as you're kind of like compensating backward. Yeah.
And I think that's the main issue I have. I think that if it were literally just clicked, mm-hmm. which would be super doable. You know, it's like, oh, you're at the wall, and there's a little like feedback like, mm-hmm. on your hand. It'd vibrate for a second.
No, do it like a steering wheel that has a limit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would work really well for me.
Yeah.
So anywho, we're not here to talk about Arkanoid.
No.
The way that we did this, the way we split, we each chose three games, and the way that we kind of did it was to choose from basically three different decades, essentially. So three different eras. So an 80s game, a 90s game, and a 2000s game.
Yes. I have two 90s games, it's kind of a mid to late 90s kind of thing. So,
well, it is also, it's of the philosophy of,
yes, yeah,
you know, kind of 2000s games,
mm-hmm.
but we roughly did that. And the thing about 2000s games is that was the early 2000s were during a low point in arcade. So not a lot came out then.
Right. Right.
But kind of like, you know, an early 90s and a late 90s thing also accomplishes the same kind of purpose.
Right.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about them. We're going to go back and forth. We're going to talk about them in order.
Yeah. So my first game is Tron, which was released by Bally Midway in 1982. I played this at Arcade Legacy in Newport. We can talk about that establishment. But I picked it because this cabinet is fucking beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tron looks really, really nice. That joystick.
Yeah.
That, like, translucent. Glowing joystick.
Translucent glowing joystick. Like, it's got all these embellishments that just make it look like this neon dream. It's amazing. And the game's pretty fun, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tron is super not bad. I played a lot of the home version of Tron.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Atari. I played a lot of Tron.
Yeah. I've never played the home version of this particular game. I've played, like, the Tron first-person shooter, like 2.0 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But that was far later than this. So we talked about this. This has got kind of a unique control scheme. Instead of having the regular kind of fight stick joystick, you have like a flight joystick. It's not a fight stick, it's a flight stick. And you've got a fire button on the trigger. And for a lot of the games, for all but one of them, you control your aim using Gary's absolute favorite input method, a rotating dial.
Yeah. There's just, before anyone at me, there's no home port of this. I think I was thinking about the home port of the Journey game.
Oh, okay.
They both have like that mini game
kind of feel to them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. But yeah, you do the joystick and the dial.
Yeah.
Please continue. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to head off tweets.
No, that's for them. The
fucking clod. Tron didn't come out in the home version. You goddamn idiot.
You asshole.
Yeah. No. Trying to avoid that.
No, for sure. For sure.
No.
But what you said there is actually pretty accurate, because this is like a mini game collection. You know, mm-hmm. this is four arcade games in one. There were going to be five. But they had to take the disc throwing game and break that off into its own thing later. Discs of Tron, which I don't care for very much. That would actually be, that would have, I think, been more successful as like an addition to this, because like the thing that really sticks out and appeals about Tron is its variety, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You know, you've got to clear all four of the games. You don't know which one you're going to get. like you just have to pick a direction to, you know, from the stage select, and it'll drop you into one of them. And every time you clear a board of four of them, you bump up a difficulty level, and the difficulty levels are named after like old timey programming languages. So you have like COBOL and Fortran and stuff like that.
Ah, Caverns of COBOL.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I definitely like, I just, in my head when I was thinking about this, like I need to find a Tron machine because I don't have an awful lot of experience with this from when I was younger. The other two games that I have, that I have picked are ones that I have a lot of kind of, you know, either experience with or nostalgia for, but this one is like, you know, it's not a game that I hear people talk about an awful lot, you know, especially from this kind of very early part of the golden age. So that's why I jumped into it. And I like I like it quite a bit.
I'm sure that there's a Retronauts where they talk about old arcade games where this is brought up.
I know they've got in their past like one episode that is all about Tron, like Tron in video games.
This is more like the kind of cultural legacy. I think we could do Tron for Adaptation Decay.
Oh yeah,
at some point. Yeah, like it's very video game literate.
True.
Like the same way I think that we could do like Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Which I would like, you know, I think would be pretty fun. Like there's like a video game esque elements to it, even if it's not a direct adaptation of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Tron is really interesting to make a video game based on a movie that is about the concept of video games.
Right, that is about the concept of being in a video game.
Yeah.
It's got a little bit of an X versus Sever thing going on.
Yeah, this is the X versus Sever of video games. the X versus Server.
Ooh.
Yeah, the Tron.
Yeah.
Tron game. Let's talk about these mini games. I've played this before, but I didn't play it. There's not a machine in town right now.
Oh,
Tron. Tron is a rotating ground control game.
Okay.
And when they finish the remodel, I think that they'll bring Tron back out.
Okay.
But there's not space for it in the weird half measure ground control we got going on right now.
Right. That remodel that is taking forever. That is
literally years and years and years. Will said that he did the pinball tournament is in old ground control.
Okay.
And he said it's still like trash. Like it still looks like they haven't made any progress.
Oh geez.
You know, building it. So it's like, we're just never going to get this, I guess.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
So,
no, yeah. There's a disc of Tron machine at Quarter World. At least there was last year when we went.
Yeah. Yeah. But no actual Tron.
Yeah. No OG Tron. So, kind of gonna do these in no real particular order. There's the IO tower where your goal is kind of in the middle of this circular chamber. You control your dude, you know, moving up, down, left, and right, and you've got just I love the aiming animation because you know you have this dial and his arm moves around smoothly to indicate which point he's aiming at, but there's no real change in his position, so it looks like he looks vaguely Lovecraftian. He's got some pentagonal symmetry going on.
His arm just rotating around his torso,
yeah,
like his omni shoulder, his 360 degree shoulder,
yeah.
He's got going on. Yeah. This is, if I recall, this is a little bit like Robotron-y, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Like, yeah. Like it is a twin stick shooter, essentially.
Yeah, it is very it is a very slow paced Robotron. It is like Robotron without the visual confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you know, the openings on this are guarded by these spider bots. And the interesting thing about them is as you shoot these spider bots, they kind of split apart. So it's a little bit like an Asteroids kind of thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the time limit, you know, even on the earliest difficulty level is very, it's pretty strict. So like you need to do everything you can to, you know, to cut your path. Otherwise you're going to be kicked out to the back. In general, I think that this game is very hard.
Mm.
I found it, you know, difficult to succeed. Even as I got, you know, pretty literate, I think I only reached like the fourth difficulty level or something like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of a part of 80s, like early 80s arcade games, is they do tend to be pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
I find like it is not that's very usual.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it wasn't off putting, and it didn't harm my experience with it. It's just worth noting that, like, you know, if you're gonna sit down at this, you're gonna have to be ready to be like roughly rebuked. I think that like the mini game collection aspect of this does make that a little bit easier to swallow because like, well, okay, I suck at this. Let me just go play one of these other ones. Right.
Yeah. Let's switch another one. Yeah. And something that's true, I think, of these old arcade games as well, that sounds like it's true of this, is that when there is a difficulty, Like there tend to be kind of difficulty walls. Like speaking, you know, I mentioned it with Tempest, but thinking about Robotron even. Like I can really consistently get to like level 7 or so of Robotron.
Yeah.
Like I love Robotron.
Yeah.
And the but then it just immediately becomes a nightmare. You know, it just like you just the designers are just like, okay, you know, we need more money, you know. And it's kind of a bummer.
A little bit.
That can happen, yeah. Like I just I'm a fan of a smooth difficulty curve.
Yes.
So
you know, and I think that maybe that was something that kind of came into vogue or, you know, became an established value as, you know, like as games, as you had more time to like sit with an individual game at home, right?
Yes.
Like smooth difficulty curves were just not, you know, it wasn't
really
lucrative.
A value.
Yeah.
It didn't matter because when they had your money once you tried the game. So,
yeah.
You know, and if you're going to, sometimes people will see an unsmooth difficulty curve as a challenge. You know, we talked about this in An Abject Suffering recently, I think. You know, but that is a that's a thing. Like some people are gonna see that wall and just be like, I need to scale the wall.
Yeah.
You know. And some people just never see the door.
Nope. So the next one here is my least favorite, the MCP cone section of it. Like this is definitely, it feels like you know, from a gameplay perspective, a throwaway. Visually, I could see how this would have been really impressive because they are actually like modeling a round object in pixel art. So the idea is like, you know, again, you're on foot and you're headed up this narrow alley, trying to get past this rotating kind of pillar of light panels, and you have to shoot your way through and like clear a path as this thing is spinning around. Again, you have a pretty strict, you know, a pretty stringent time limit. So, like, you're not going to have a lot of time to, like, clear a path, wait for it to come back around, widen it, and then make your go. You're going to have to, like, be shooting the entire time as you're making your approach and even doing, like, bank shots so that you can get it. The collision detection's a little bit weird on this one, too. What visually appears to be a really wide, clear path, is not, and the way that they make this harder is just to, shorten the amount of time that you have to do it and also, increase the rotation speed.
Time limit's not my favorite thing.
No.
In old arcade games in general.
Right.
Either. Like, or I mean in any video games, but specifically, you know, once I put down the quarter and I just, you know, again, it's that kind of goal oriented versus your performance on the way to the goal.
Right. Right.
You know, so points versus, just, you know, so having that time limit, I just want to know that I can accomplish the thing.
Yeah. Like this feels like it would have been, you know, if this game came out 5 or 6 years later, it would have been like a bonus stage in between two levels. You know, like, hey, here's this kind of challenging, unintuitive thing that you can do to either get extra points or like an extra life or something like that. You know, and that it would have felt less egregious there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
My favorite thing here, though, is the light cycles.
This is my favorite as well.
This is
I think if any of these were going to spin off into a solo thing, this should be the one that did.
Absolutely. I think they're like, I remember playing like a Half-Life mod that had it was mostly like the disc throwing one, but it actually had light cycles built in, like a first person light cycle thing, which was very difficult but also pretty fun.
That's rad.
Yeah. So this plays like a snake game. I actually, in my head, I thought like, wow, this is super early for a snake thing. Like, is this the precursor to that? No. There was a 1976 game called Blockade that did that. Snake was definitely a genre by this point. But yeah, you're on a grid and you have your light cycle. Your trigger actually controls your speed. So if you need to do like a real tight maneuvering, you release it and then you do your little zigzags and whatever. But if you're trying to like outpace somebody, you jam on that accelerator to try and get ahead of them and do the, you know, you're trying to go
cut
against
them off.
Cut off the AI or trap them in a place where they're going to make a mistake. And the way that this gets harder is they add more opponents, which, puts more barriers on the field. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of my favorite things, like I like the movie Tron, like that growing up and such. I haven't seen it in a long time, but
yeah,
you know, I'm into Tron. Is this feels like this is the scene from the movie? They all are, but this one I feel like you're engaging more directly with what the characters did in the movie. Like they literally just played Blockade essentially.
Yeah,
you know, they just played Snake, and you're just doing the same thing. And light cycles look real cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tired lightsabers, wired light cycles.
Yeah.
The I love this game.
Yeah.
I think this is super fun. One of the things, it's one of the mini games that's in Frog Fractions 2 is a turn-based competitive Snake.
Oh, nice.
Essentially. And that's really, like, it works. Like, it's a weird thing. Like, you wouldn't think, like, it would work, but it does.
Mm-hmm.
So.
It would almost be like a more complicated tic-tac-toe at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or yeah. There's a game called
Tic-tac-throw?
No, and that is true. There is a game called that.
Yeah.
There's a board game that is a competitive version that's called Laser Rider, I think.
Okay.
Which cut I haven't played it, but the case is beautiful. It's set up like a VHS box set.
Mm.
And it is a board game version of this where you take turns laying track and then also maneuvering your bike.
Okay.
On the tracks, essentially you want to lay track so your opponent crashes into a wall or what have you.
Nice.
Or goes off the maze, which is the table. which like, looks really neat, but this has been like an enduring idea, like these light cycles, the specific thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's about my favorite scene in the movie too. Like,
yeah, absolutely,
yeah,
super cool.
Yeah, and then the most complicated of these four games is the Battle Tanks. Like, this one feels like, you know, of these, you know, light cycles could spin out into its own thing and be very fun. Battle Tanks also feels like a pretty fully formed idea. You're in a maze, so you know it plays out almost like a Pac-Man kind of thing, and you are trying to take out your enemies. The thing is, you're not shooting at the cardinal directions. Like, your facing has no bearing on which way you aim. You're still aiming with your dial, you know, spinning the turret, and your shots can bank off of walls. So the way that this articulates is you never want to be in line of sight of your enemies. Their bullets travel much faster than yours, so they're pretty much always going to, you know, shoot you. What you have to do is you have to kill enemies on bank shots around these mazes, which makes the geometry of the maze actually really, really important in a way that isn't actually that big of a deal in something like a Pac-Man, or at least at the level at which I play Pac-Man. Right.
Yeah. Does it give you, I can't remember, does it give you like an overhead view of the maze, or do you just have to make a mental map?
It gives you an overhead view. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really cool. Again, kind of having that dual stick aspect where you're aiming the turret and moving independently.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really neat.
Yeah. It's difficult to, you know, to get an idea of how to do this effectively. Like, it took me a few, basically all these games, I didn't have to put quarters in for different tries. So iterating was actually a lot easier. Like this, so Arcade Legacy Newport and then the one in the crazy abandoned mall, they are both like pay by the hour kind of thing. So it was like $5 for an hour of play. So like it was easy to iterate and like figure out how to take this. But yeah, it's not exactly intuitive if you have played a game that looks similar to this. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice to not have that financial pressure. Did you find being in that situation, did that impact your kind of experience or enjoyment? Like, did it, cause some games, like this might be more true of Captain America, but like beat 'em ups, like they are, as long as you have quarters, you can beat it.
Right.
Yeah. You just get to put unlimited life code and like, you're, you know, it's like you're playing with a game genie, you know, and doing that kind of $5 for an hour is kind of like every game has a game genie essentially, as long as there's a continue built in.
Yeah.
Did that impact your enjoyment at all?
Mildly, because I was so kind of goal focused on Captain America and Area 51, you know, for getting toward the end, like I saw it as a little bit of a boon, you know, like it took away the friction and let me just kind of focus on, you know, kind of, I feel like I could still identify the points where it's like, oh, they just wanted to put up a wall here. So you would put in more money. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I could still see that. With Tron, that was actually like a very positive thing for me because I could actually like play and practice and get good at, you know, passing these different difficulty levels.
There's something that I can imagine that like if you were training, you know, that $5 an hour thing, now if you went into an actual machine, like you'd get farther on a quarter.
Yeah.
Than you would ordinarily. Yeah. So
I could probably get past like the first two difficulty levels on a quarter.
Yeah. Yep. So Yeah, pretty cool. And this is not the only Tron game.
No.
So there are other, there's not, this original Tron was not ported, which was my eternal shame, which I brought up earlier, but there have been other Tron video games.
Yeah, yeah. Specifically, like Tron 2.0 could be a WoF game.
Yeah, people talk that up. I always looked like, I assumed it was trash, mm-hmm. because it was, you know, Tron 2, it was a sequel to Tron that came out in 2008 or whatever.
Right.
But people like it, so.
Yeah. No, Tron 2.0 is like, it is a shooter that is a little bit arcadey, but you are reading people's emails and stuff in it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is cool.
Yeah.
I know Video Games Hot Dog Zach is a fan of that game.
Yeah, he loves that game. It's just a little bit too long.
Yeah. I believe it. Cool. Yeah. I wish there was a Tron in one of my home arcades.
I was surprised. We have an embarrassment of Trons here in Cincinnati.
we shipped them all your way. Tron, they're migrating east. Eventually they'll crawl across the Atlantic and show up on the shores of sunny England.
Yeah. Crawl across just the floor of the sea.
The beachheads. It'll be like Saving Private Ryan in the beginning. With all these Trons storming Normandy. Yeah. My 80s game that I played was Dig Douglas. Hello, I'm Dig Douglas. So this is Dig Dug. It's technically a maze chase game. Mm-hmm. It plays a little bit different than one, but that's probably as close to the genre as you could find.
It's a maze chase game where you are making your own maze.
Yes. Yeah. Made by Namco in 1982. This comes in a cabaret and a cocktail cabinet. I played it on the upright only, sadly. And Dig Dug, I originally wanted to do exclusively things that had not been ported because I wanted that special experience. But I've always kind of liked Dig Dug, and I was like, when else am I going to have a good opportunity to do a deep dive on Dig Dug?
Yeah.
As I do this, like Dig Dug has been ported to everything. But I always liked Dig Dug as a kid. I remember playing the home version of it over at my cousin's house. And I think it's mostly just the color scheme.
Oh yeah.
Like as you go on, the beautiful layers of dirt that look like an amazing, like delicious parfait.
Yeah. Parfait was exactly what I was going to say.
And just like, it just gets very pretty,
yeah.
You know, and I just always like Dig Dug. And then I put, $7 or $8 into it. Now I realize I don't like Dig Dug.
Oh no.
Yeah. I mean, it's still like fun to the level I was, what's interesting is part of the experiment of this is like playing at the level to try to get good at this and play it for score. It was a less fun way of playing than just my putting in a couple quarters and not caring if I died.
Right. Right.
You know, like trying to get good at this and the way that Dig Dug wants you to be good at it made it a less fun game for me.
Yeah.
In Dig Dug, you play, the character, who's named Dig Dug. Which is a Japanese pun for wanna dig. He's later renamed Taizo Hori, and in the lore, he is the father of Mr. Driller.
Okay.
And the ex-husband of Toby Kissy Masuyo of Baraduke, which is a game that did not come out in the States.
Huh.
There's a lot of Dig Dug lore.
Yeah. Just a real acrimonious parting. Irreconcilable Dug frinces.
If you don't stop pumping, we're done. So you find there's just two enemies in this. There's not a wide variety. There are Pookas, which are the little red guys that have goggles.
Yeah, got goggle friends.
Yep. They're modeled after tomatoes. And Fygars, which are the tiny dragons.
Yeah.
And this game, essentially, you know, there's kind of second level and first level play of it. To get to that second level play is for high scores. And to get to that, it's essentially becomes a game about kind of enemy management. You're a Dig Dug, you scoot around tunneling and you have a air pump and you can hit an enemy and hit them, on the fourth inflate, they will blow up.
Right.
And die. That's kind of the initial way that I played was just to try to get as far as you can and stay away from the monsters and blow them up.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really the way you want to play though. And the game very, relatively quickly signals that to you. As a non-viable kind of play method.
How do they do that? Just by having too many enemies and you can't, okay. So you can't effectively inflate and kill all of them in time before they overwhelm you.
You can, but it becomes much more difficult. So the thing that they want you to do for high scores becomes a viable strategy as well, which is crushing enemies under rocks.
Right, right.
You realize at that point that pumping enemies is not something you want to do to destroy them. It is a delaying mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to kill them for points. But then the game bumps up in difficulty again where you have to do that. So you have a kind of, you'll get to a later board, like as early as the teens, And you have to clear the board of a couple guys or you can't actually engage with the game normally.
Oh, weird.
And it is very trial and error kind of based which guys you want to get rid of. There is a correct answer. You know, I need to get this Puka and this Fygar off the screen, and then I can actually do some shenanigans with dropping rocks.
Right.
I found that very frustrating.
So it's not just a matter of, like, I would always, when I played this, prioritize the Frygars, or Fygars, rather, because they are so much more dangerous than the Pukas, right? Like the Pukas, they go faster, but the Fygars have their little flame breath.
Yeah, the Fygars, the difference between these two guys, they both, so I guess I should explain a little bit more of Dig Dug. I just assume everyone knows Dig Dug.
Right.
So you have, in each level, you have some enemies kind of moving back and forth in burrows that they've already created. And at any time, they can turn into ghosts to jump to other tunnels that you've dug. And once they are in a tunnel that is contiguous with yours, they will chase you. Pukas just kind of move around and chase you. Fygars can shoot fire only horizontally.
Right.
There's some kind of clever quirks to that. If you kill a Fygar horizontally, you get more points because you're in danger of blastback. You also get more points if you blow up guys on lower layers.
Okay.
And you get points just for digging. So there's a lot of that going on. Kind of thing. You can... the other thing that the game does to kind of encourage you to play for score is once you get to the point where you have to drop rocks on enemies. So there are rocks kind of embedded in the dirt. If you dig a tunnel under them, and the rock will wiggle for a second and then fall.
Right, right. It can crush you too.
Yes, and will.
Yeah.
You know, it is tricky. So the strategy in the kind of mid game, and this is a game that has a kill screen. So I was still pretty firmly in the early game, you know, getting to my late 30s. But the is to create long vertical tunnels because enemies will start to run away from rocks. They'll get smarter. Trick them into chasing you up a long vertical tunnel that ends in a rock, moving out of the way and having the rock crush them before they can get out of the way.
Okay.
That's the way to get the most points. It is immensely satisfying when it pulls off. And if you drop two rocks, it puts a piece of fruit in the middle of the stage that's worth tons and tons of points.
Yeah.
You have to get this fruit. And that's pretty much it. The reason why it's not, like, it ceases to be fun is the way that they escalate difficulty. So it starts, you know, the first five levels or so are all pretty reasonable. But then they start doing things like having two Pukas in the same burrow that overlap. So you can't see that there are two of them until you pump up one of them.
Oh, God. And, so you're planted. Like, when you're pumping, you have to commit to that action.
Yes. Yeah, you can't pump and move. Also, turning around feels like it takes a few frames. Like, so if something's chasing you, if it's right behind you, you will not have time to turn around and pump it.
Right.
You know, in a weird way that feels kind of Resident Evil-y, almost. Like, it takes a second to do that. So, like, staggering them like that feels very unfair to me. You know, if they're both chasing you and you turn around to pump one of them, the second one just hits you while you're planted.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't tell that there's two of them. Like, they're overlapping sprites.
Yeah, there's no signal.
There's no signaling that's happening. So they start doing a lot of that. They start, and then enemies just get faster. And that happens for the entire game.
While your move speed,
never, you know, changes. It's not that type of game. So it just ends up becoming very frustrating. You know, having those kind of cheap tricks and not knowing which monsters to take off the board before I can start doing my rock plays.
Yeah.
And it again, it's very fun when you pull off the rock play. And you get a lot of points, which is good. But it does, it just escalates very quickly. And at a certain point, I started feeling like the game was being cheap. In a way that never happens with Pac-Man. Like, in Pac-Man, which is the other, you know, kind of definitive Namco maze chase game, is that, like, you know, I'm being chased, but at any given point I have a couple different methods of escape.
Right.
You know, I don't have to make decisions early on that feel kind of arbitrary.
Yeah.
And that's I guess why, you know, Dig Dug has always been kind of an also-ran, you know?
Just because it is more arcane.
It's like
way.
A worse game.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just arcane, but, like, it's also just kind of worse. Like, it's just kind of a worse designed game.
Yeah.
You know, it's neat, but it's not as elegant, you know, as Pac-Man is. And it's, you could do a game, and maybe Dig Dug 2 does this. I played a little bit of Dig Dug 2, which is really weird.
Yeah.
Looking, if you've never seen Dig Dug 2, it does a little bit more of this, but just that emphasis on specifically just only rocks as a method of taking care of this business.
Yeah.
I found frustrating. There's a couple weird little quirks. of it, which is one, there's a glitch you can get that I tried. I spent probably about, $1.25 trying just to do this.
Okay.
Which is if you kill an enemy through a rock and through Infladium at the exact same time, it despawns all enemies off the screen but doesn't end the level.
Okay.
So you, and that means you lose because you can't make it to the next stage. There's a time limit in Dig Dug as well. And when the time limit comes up, you don't lose. The enemies try to escape.
Hmm.
And if they get away, you just go to the next stage. So again, that is a score-based kind of conceit or value.
Right.
But if you do this glitch, you can just dig out the entire level. And then you just, you have to, then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And there goes that Dig Dug machine. Like somebody from the nice man from the arcade has to reset it.
Yeah. Yeah. The man with his quarter counter thing. Yeah.
Yeah. His little belt.
Yeah.
Sheath thing. Cause otherwise it just, nothing happens. I couldn't pull that off though. But I've seen it online. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
And there is a kind of a fun kill screen for this. When you get to the 256th level, it spawns you in the middle. It does the final level, which is just you and a Pooka.
Okay.
And the Pooka spawns on top of you every time, and it just drains the rest of your levels, your lives.
Hmm.
And you just start this like unending series of like, ding 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 ding. You know, you think you're gonna get to start this level, and then just your guy just ding 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 immediately dies as a Pooka lands on him every single time. So I ended up being more frustrated with this. Like, it was fun to get it, and it was fun to sit down and try to figure it out as like a novel experience. I wish that I had done it for like Mappy or something.
Yeah, Mappy would have been more satisfying, probably. I like Mappy just a little bit more. But like the casual version of Dig Dug, like I don't know. Do you think this will take away from just like, oh, here's Dig Dug, I'm gonna sit down and just play this kind of fun weird digging game for a little bit?
Probably not. Like, it's still audiovisually, audio wise and visual wise, stimulating and appealing.
Yeah.
To me, like, just looking at these characters and looking at these sound effects and hearing the sound effects and stuff is appealing to me.
Yeah.
I could still see like throwing a quarter into my, my old college roommate Dig Douglas every once in a while. But like, it was just a really interesting kind of illustration of like how playing the right way was the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, at least, with this game. And I wrote down my high score on a little piece of paper and then lost it, which sucks. I can get to like the late 30s in levels, like somewhere between 36 and 38.
Okay.
In there. And that's extremely hard and was just like, ate a lot of quarters.
Yeah. No, I've been watching like the later levels in this, and that looks excruciating. Like,
this moves really fast.
Yeah. The person that I'm looking at, like they are running over the enemies. Like they're occupying the same space.
Yeah.
So there must be some kind of like frame specific invincibility that you can get.
So I should have mentioned that too. So that ends up becoming a major tactic, because when an enemy is inflated, they become intangible. So you can walk through them when they're inflated.
Okay.
So I think what's happening, unless that is like a frame specific kind of speedrun thing, is if you do like a quick, tiny, like little courtesy pump on your way by, then you can walk through them.
Yeah. Just like a, hey, how's it going?
Yeah. Yeah. Just how's your father? And then you scoot on by the Pooka, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got, so it was, I got there. And the thing about being able to just kind of put quarters into this is you do have, the enemies are persistent. When you killed a certain number of enemies, if you put in another quarter, they stay dead.
Okay.
Or if you die, if you lose a life, rather, they stay dead.
Huh.
They don't respawn. When you respawn, it's not Dark Souls. So the, with patience, you can get through this, but it's a kill screen game.
Mm-hmm.
You're not playing to actually get to the end.
Right. It doesn't show you a cutscene.
It was kind of a bummer. Like, I always thought of this as like, I love Dig Dug.
Yeah.
Like, these old games, like more than a lot of similar old games.
Mm-hmm.
Dig Dug and Mappy have always been my kind of two go-tos. And now I need to actually give Mappy a shot with $7 and see like what getting good at Mappy feels like.
Yeah.
And see if that is a fun way to play it or not.
Yeah. Is there an easy way to get like a Namco Museum on a modern system? Like, is that like a PC version, or not PSP, PSP version rather?
Not that I know of.
Yeah.
They put all those out for PlayStation. I don't think those are on the store.
Okay.
And also the easy way would be like,
just maim,
or just maiming it.
Yeah. You've got that. I also got that 3D printed Raspberry Pi thing.
Oh, cool.
How do you like yours?
I have not, it's partially put together. I did not have a small screwdriver.
Oh, dang. Yeah.
So I couldn't do it. So I bought a small screwdriver, but I haven't had time to work with it yet. So it's still, it's half disassembled on my desk.
Yeah. My biggest memory of Dig Dug. So in my college house, I talk about this college house all the time. I lived there for like 5 years. Had a roommate. She was a sister to me. You know, we all went to high school together. And like, you know, it was fun getting to know her. But she was an art student and she never played video games. Like just wasn't a thing she did. However, the one exception to that was the joystick, like one of those all-in-one joystick. You plug it into the composite cable at the front of the TV and play, you know, Namco or Atari games or whatever. She was a Dig Dug fiend. I don't know if she was like engaging with the high-level play like you were doing. Like this, but she would routinely just like trounce all of us in score. It was it was a sight to behold. She was very passionate about Dig Dug.
Like I imagine if she was, you know, doing well in score, she was at least focusing on rocks over you know, exploding enemies. That's one of the things that's kind of a bummer about it, is that it doesn't, I think it would have been interesting to make both strategies viable.
Yeah.
You know, because they both take skill. Like when before I figured this out, when I was just trying to play like old Dig Dug, I still came up with kind of mini methods to blow guys up, you know, until it gets to those early teens where you really have to start using rocks because you're always going to have this huge train of things chasing you. And, you know, they're generally faster than you.
Right.
You know, Pukas are definitely faster than you. Fygars are not faster than you, but they can zap you. So the, up until that point, I'd learned some strategies just for blowing guys up with my pop.
Yeah. Well, it's discriminatory. I walk in here and think, hey, I've got an inflation fetish, and all of a sudden they catfish me with a crush fetish thing. So
yeah, just pick a lane.
Pick a lane, Dig Dug.
You know,
come on.
I've only got one shot in this chamber, and I want to use it well, you know? Like I it's not like I got a refractory period, Dig Dug.
Yeah.
The famous catchphrase.
Yeah.
Dig Dug. I've got a refractory period, Dig Dug.
Yeah. I've got a Billy Mitchell. Do I look like I have Billy Mitchell in my pocket? And also I've got a refractory period.
Yeah.
I'm looking at footage. I've never actually seen Dig Dug 2 in motion. This is a very strange game. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels, you know, it like I love those early Namco strange sequels.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, you know, not so much obviously like Miss Pac-Man, which is pretty much just Pac-Man, but like you guys are like Super Pac-Man.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just this odd.
Mm-hmm.
The Avengers.
Now, the second game that I want to talk about is Captain America and the Avengers.
I'm Avengers!
Yes.
Captain America, need your help!
Avengers, assemble!
Thank you, Quicksilver!
Thank you, Wonder Man!
Wonder Man.
Just said, well, you're fucking chauffeur? Come on.
Yeah. I'm also a superhero, guys.
Yeah.
I'm arguably more powerful than at least half of you.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
At least in this game, they understand the only purpose that Namor the Submariner should serve. So,
yeah.
Unlike yours, where he's a playable character.
And nude.
Yep. And
mostly nude.
And mostly nude. So, yeah, this is a Data East game released in 1991. I play this at 16-Bit South in downtown Cincinnati. Very nice bar. Very nice barcade. You were there, Gary. I didn't pick this just because the most recent Avengers movie came out, Infinity War. This did,
you know, that is the way to get clicks. Like, yes. We should probably change the name of this podcast to Watch Out for Infinity War.
Yes.
At least for 1 week.
Yeah, at least for 1 week, and then it is a reel in the SEO. No, this is actually a game that I have a tremendous amount of affection for. They had this at Laser Arcade in the Kingsgate Mall in Mansfield, Ohio, which is where my dad is the arcade where my dad would take us. And this is, I don't know if I've told this story here, but like Captain America and the Avengers was a game where I learned, like, I think the first time I really learned about trade-offs because, you know, I would take my tokens and I would go over to the side that had the goal-based games, right? You know, just go to the regular arcade games. And I would play Captain America and the Avengers and try to get to the end. And like my brother and, you know, my cousins and stuff would go over to the ticket games, right? You know, do skee-ball and stuff. And like we would get, you know, the day would end, they would have like mustache combs and Tootsie Rolls, and I would have nothing. And like I'd be like, I got really upset about it. And like, well, you didn't play the game that got you tickets. I was like, oh, well, I still had a good time. It doesn't matter if I have a stupid thing I'm going to throw away. So
yeah.
Like it was just like weirdly, this game taught me about opportunity cost.
Yeah, or just the value of an experience versus an object.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a beat 'em up. And go listen to the beat 'em up episode. Like I'm kind of lukewarm on these, especially like super basic ones. Mm-hmm. This is a pretty basic beat 'em up. This is a 4-player game. There are two versions of the cabinet. You can either have play 2 people at once or 4 people at once. When you have 4 people, you have Captain America, you have Iron Man, Hawkeye, or Vision. Mm-hmm. When I played this as a kid, I was all about being either Iron Man or Vision.
Sure. Be the robots or the robot boy.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted laser beams, you know?
And this is I love that as a big Marvel dork, like this is specifically tied to a period of history, because this is White Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he had all the color drained from him, which is when he had his personality drained from him as part of the West Coast Avengers.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
I don't know any of this. I just figured that's what Vision looked like back then.
Yeah, he had, well, that's why. It was what he looked like back then, but that's why. It's one of those things where I love comic book media where you can kind of place the year. Well, I mean, I love Marvel versus Capcom 2 because it's all about the transmode virus and Marrow is a playable character. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
I know what you're drawing from.
Yeah. And what is it? The arcade game is specifically based off of the designs from Pride of the X-Men.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The X-Men
arcade game, rather. Sorry.
Yeah.
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 weirdly enough, the 6-player X-Men is like a fucking rarity everywhere. We have 2 of them in this town, god damn it, and they have the original screens
here too. Well, it was once a rarity, and I almost did that as a thing. I was just thinking, but it's a really basic beat 'em up.
But this one, like it feels like one generation earlier than that particular strain of Konami beat 'em up. Right. Mm-hmm. Like your sprites are really small, like comparing footage of this to footage of the beat 'em up that you're going to talk about, which is also Marvel themed. It's very funny how we just kind of arrived at that.
it's just a weird, like there's, and you know, this is not time for the rebuttal field. Like I'm not putting on a tangent here. Uh-huh. That's 60 seconds on the clock, but there's just weird things that Marvel is just definitively better at.
Yep.
Like one of them is movies,
mm-hmm.
you know, because like other than those Batman movies that are good, like, you know, the DC cinematic universe has sucked. And the other has just been like, arcade beat 'em ups, yeah. or arcade video games, I guess is the way to put it. Like,
yeah.
There's a couple, you know, there's a couple okay Batman, like I think there's a couple okay Batman racers. There's a shitty Superman side scroller that like looks beautiful but plays really badly. It wasn't a good, you know, on the home console, sure, you know, like Batman Returns for Super Nintendo is all fine and good,
mm-hmm.
but in the arcade, like Marvel was king of the beat 'em ups.
Yeah,
between these three.
Mm-hmm. No, you're not going to find any disagreement for me. I can't think of a single DC arcade game actually, so I'm happy you came up with some examples.
There aren't very many of them.
Yeah, yeah, but this is definitely, you know, it feels like a beat 'em up, right? Like it feels like you know, this is a fast follow off of like the first Turtles, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got you've got kind of the basics there. You have the attack, the jump. The thing that feels like really interesting about this is the fact that your aerial attacks will change depending on if you activate the attack on the ascent or the descent of a jump.
Yeah. The Turtles arcade beat 'em up does that.
Okay.
Well, that's how you do that, like when you'll start just flapping your weapon in the air and slowly descend.
Yeah.
That's what changes that.
Okay, cool. I didn't refresh myself on that one. The other thing that makes this kind of like not just a straight up standard beat 'em up is the fact that occasionally you will go into a side scrolling shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Very strangely, so like Iron Man and Vision will fly. Captain America has like a weird little hover scooter that shoots shields.
Yeah. Yeah, it shoots and returns.
Yep.
Like it goes like flips back and forth.
Yeah, and then Hawkeye has a little like hoverboard, and he does his he does his bow and arrow kind of things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like it goes back and forth between those as the, you know, as the stages kind of require, and it's very interesting to play like a 4-player cooperative side scrolling shooter like that. Like, you know, you usually max out at like 2 for that.
Well, it's funny too because you talked about how the sprites are small, but they're not small for shooter standards.
No.
Like, so it ends up being this kind of weird shoot 'em up with like pretty large sprites.
Yeah.
All around, like the ships and yourself are.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, because of that, they're pretty fair. Like it's not bullet helly at all.
No.
Because you have this gigantic hitbox. Like they're pretty fun segments.
Yeah. Like it feels like you're pretty much always fighting like mid bosses in it.
Yeah.
You know, like you're fighting sprites that are a little bit bigger than you, that have that present a pretty large target and have, you know, fairly predictable, but just like fun to engage with patterns.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So yeah, it's like it has that variety built into it, which I think kind of like launders a little bit of the tappa 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 that's inherent in the design of these.
It's also not as hateful as sometimes these can be in general.
No,
like
no.
if you're up on your jump kicks, mm-hmm. This like you can't. It's very hard to just not get hurt.
Yeah,
but it's easier than some. You like I find it easier than the Simpsons arcade game.
Oh yeah,
where I think the bosses are designed to drain quarters like a motherfucker.
Yeah, like the bosses are meant to like pick you up by the ankles and shake you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like that has helped, by the fact that your range attack isn't limited at all. Like, if you press jump and attack at the same time, every character has access to what they call an Avenger attack, which is just like for Iron Man, it fires a laser. For Cap, he throws a shield. Like, you know, you can engage with enemies from across the screen. Whereas I think in a lot of beat 'em ups, you know, usually you have to say like, okay, well, I'll get this side of the screen, you get that side of the screen. Like crowd management, it is far more manageable to play this by yourself, which I did for this, because of the vocabulary they give you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't play this for this episode, but I put tons of quarters in this and played the home version a lot. Like,
oh yeah,
I have tons of affection for this game.
Yeah, that home port is actually okay. Like they do an okay job of adapting this for the SNES specifically, but it just feels a little bit like loose and sloppy compared to the arcade mm-hmm. a little bit.
It's not as good. It's not bad either.
Yeah, it is not. Yeah. It is not as bad as it could be, or as bad as you would expect it to be. Have you played the NES home version of this? Yeah, that's it's a different game. You play it's like a regular side scroller. It is Contra, but without like being run and gun.
Yeah,
it's very weird.
It's super strange. I also don't think it's that bad though.
Yeah.
Either. Like I remember having some real fun with it. So mm-hmm.
yeah, the plot of this. So Red Skull is causing chaos and kind of amassing money. He's working with a bunch of other supervillains to build this laser on the moon so he can destroy cities on Earth. The typical supervillain kind of stuff. What's great about this is there is a real rogues gallery. You know, every area, every stage that you go to has, you know, like a mini boss and then a boss at the end. Mm-hmm. So you get to see some, you know, you get to see some of Avengers mainstays, right? Like you fight Ultron at one point.
Yeah. So some a couple A-list and a bunch of C-list, like Avengers villains.
Crossbones, the assassin. Okay.
Yeah. Thank goodness. I love Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
You know, just the shitty, shitty, shitty Avengers villains. So good.
Yeah. Including Mech Taco. I don't understand that. The translation on this is very, very good.
Yeah.
By which I mean it's bad.
Which the first boss of this living laser, where you fight him with Claw.
Uh-huh.
Claw is the guy who is in Black Panther.
Hmm.
Who Michael B. Jordan kills, who has the weird hand. That's supposed to be Claw.
Hmm.
It's played by Andy Serkis.
Nice.
So
yeah.
Yeah. So hey kids, hey Black Panther maniacs.
Do you want me to put Black Panther in the title too?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Like, put explainer. Put This Is America, Black Panther, Infinity War explainer.
All of these This Is America explainers. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah. Do you get it, idiots? Yeah, like, because, this is complicated because you're morons. Yeah. Like, it is not. It's so not complicated.
No,
like,
it's an amazing video of fucking tilts, but come on, guys.
Well, what's funny, too, about it is that, like, it feels like all the when I've seen the explainer videos, it's always just like, did you see that horse in the background?
Yeah.
And it's never like, look at this heartbreaking juxtaposition of
people dancing joyously,
doing like traditional kind of like African dances,
uh-huh.
while talking about like this is about how this is being sold to you. Like,
yeah.
I had a long conversation with Jeremy about it. It's like, can I like this?
Yeah.
Like, am I part of the problem for loving this like as a song?
Yeah.
Because this is definitely me, you know, taking this kind of like Paul Simon style Graceland African chorus, like super mm-hmm. catchy thing, and appreciating it on a surface value when it is there for juxtaposition of like irony,
mm-hmm.
you know, as well, like being next to real issues. But the issues are all just right there.
Yeah.
But we need clicks.
Yep. Okay. So, like, so I'll put it in there.
Infinity War, This Is America, Black Panther explainer. I think it's probably a good direction for the show to move on in general.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. If anyone who PayPals duckfeed.tv $10, I will personally send them an explanation of This Is America, the video of just the surface stuff of it.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah. just a bunch of call outs to the stuff that's happening in the foreground.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, here he is next to a car.
Yeah.
He's on Gucci.
But anyway, the translation of this is very fun. Have some choice lines here. You came here to die. Ask the police. It's another trap, you stupid men.
I love referring to the Avengers as you stupid men.
You stupid men.
That's such a good, like, it's a pretty accurate description of the Avengers. Like, you stupid men. It's very funny.
Well, especially at that time, right? There are no women in this game, even in the rogues gallery of just kind of like support characters who lend you a hand every once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was like, there's not, like, other than, the Wasp.
Right.
Who in the NES version, does the Wasp show up? I have a vague memory of the Wasp functioning as an invincibility during a version of this game.
Oh yeah. Like the Wasp will actually act as an option for you. Yeah.
Yeah. The Wasp is in it.
Okay. Yeah.
There just aren't a lot of Lady Avengers of this era.
Right. Right.
Yeah. There's some, like Scarlet Witch and the Wasp are like pretty much holding it down. And then there's like Tigra, but there's not a whole lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Game has 5 stages. You kind of start in a city, you move to the rooftops, then you go to the sea for some reason, and then and then you're up on the moon base.
Yep.
Taking out the giant laser. There's a good amount of variety in the enemies. Like you have range guys who will fight you, which doesn't feel as bullshit as otherwise it would be, because you do have the range attack on you. And you also have enemies that'll hold you down too. Like you get the grappling hook guys will tie you up. The visual design of this is very funny because you are able to pick things up. They really didn't. You can tell they obviously, you know, they didn't want to design like a holding posture or like a hand position for every single thing you could pick up and throw. So it's just a bunch of generic kind of things that apply to everything. And everybody looks like they have never held something like they just woke up with hands.
They're presenting it to you. I feel like they're handing you a tray with a drink on it.
Yep.
Which I love, and they do the same thing with everything. So like the Vision can walk up to you and give you a can of soda, because that's one of the big weapons that you use in this game. But then he can also walk up and present you with a vending machine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want a soda or do you want the source of all soda?
Yep. Teach a man to fish.
Yeah. Like I really like it. I think it's very funny.
Yeah. I also love the final encounter for this, because like you're fighting Red Skull, and he's just in a suit looking real dapper, and you're doing a beat down on him, and then he turns into a gigantic red skeleton mech.
Yeah.
And then he's off to the side in his like diving bell. It is very good.
With his butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a super fun game.
Yeah.
And beat 'em ups, it's all Turtles, Simpsons, and X-Men.
Yes,
for most people.
I mean, that entire Konami run, and that's fair, right? Those are mm-hmm. those are fine games, especially if you're playing them with a bunch of people in an arcade. And this has a lot of similarities to those, but like this, it definitely feels like a weird kind of like evolutionary dead end, like this mixture and hybrid that they do.
Yeah, yeah. The game that I'm going to talk about next is similar as well.
Yeah.
Like there's a hybrid factor to it. And I like the idea of there's other kinds of those beat 'em ups, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm down for a beat 'em up with a gimmick. You know, like it makes like playing through Captain America the Avengers or Spider-Man, which is the one I did, makes me like not want to play Final Fight.
Yeah.
You know, like why would I just want to be a dude punching things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like even if you don't care for superheroes in general, like why not be a mechanical baseball?
Right.
You know, like why not be a Battletoad? Like, why would you just want to be Hagar? You know, fuck Hagar.
Yeah, fuck
like,
that guy.
Fuck Guy and Cody. Like, I don't need those guys, you know? Just like, I just don't understand why you would not want to, in this kind of genre that has the mechanics are kind of very basic, even when they're good, like why you wouldn't want to, you know, have like a little bit more flavor.
Mm-hmm.
So the second game I did was Spider-Man the video game, which it's not quite the video game. This is a beat 'em up developed by Sega in 1991. Never ported to anything, which is kind of crazy because it's really good. Mm-hmm. It features this quartet of randos. You get Spider-Man, which makes sense. Black Cat, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Hawkeye makes a little bit less sense. Namor, which makes no sense. On here as your four different people, and the
Namor who is literally out of his element.
Yeah, Namor and has tons of he has the power of in the literature hydroelectricity, which means he just shoots electricity. But I love that it makes me think of that Cecil episode of The Simpsons.
Oh yeah,
and don't go in. There's hydroelectricity in there.
Hydroelectric and hydrodynamic.
Yeah, no society has ever considered hydroelectric dams a calling. I've always liked this game. I think this game is a very fun and kind of interesting and ambitious beat 'em up.
Super attractive too.
Yeah, the designs are really interesting. Like everyone is very big, but they're also very lanky.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything has kind of a European Mobius style drawing, to it. Like
yeah.
Spider-Man is kind of hunched over. Like he looks like I would read a comic that used this art style, and no one has exaggerated muscles. Like Namor is pretty cut, but he looks like he's like, it's all tone.
Yeah.
As opposed to being this hulking He-Man.
Right.
And that's attractive. I think that's a cool look.
Yeah. Yeah. It is explicitly like anti-Liefeld, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So this is a fairly standard beat 'em up. You've got your standard moves kind of attacks, jumps, jump kicks. You have a super move that kind of clears an area and drains health that you have. You don't have lives. Each quarter is 400 health.
Mm-hmm.
And your health does drain slowly. Like, I don't know if it's hunger or what.
God. Everybody is just mildly poisoned.
Yeah. Namor, it makes sense. But yeah. Like everyone else, and it happens very slowly. So it's not like Gauntlet,
right?
It kind of functions as a time limit, but it very rarely is a factor.
Mm-hmm.
There are actually some differences between characters. I couldn't find a detailed explainer to catch everything that I couldn't catch. One of the obvious things is like Hawkeye does fire a bow,
right,
as his main attack. Like he doesn't, so he pulls out his bow and arrow and attacks, and it has range to it, whereas Spider-Man punches,
right.
And the kind of trade-off is Hawkeye's slower. It's slow to pull out his bow.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out all of the differences for everyone else, but they do exist. And there are some advanced moves you can do that I couldn't do consistently. Like there's a back attack that I could do sometimes.
Right.
But I could not figure out consistently. So that's a little bit frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
You had a little bit of that that sophistication that you got in, say, a Shadows of Mystara, but it didn't the controls weren't quite good enough to support it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. It didn't ruin it or anything. It just meant that I played it like a more basic beat 'em up than I needed to.
Yeah.
The bosses in this game are extremely fair for a beat 'em up.
That's refreshing. It's
really cool. Like they don't break out of combos very often, and that's the primary thing that bosses do to make beat 'em ups not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Is after you hit them twice, they just immediately do a counterattack.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen that often here, with a couple exceptions. There are a couple of pretty bad bosses, but most of them are pretty fair.
Mm-hmm.
And they do the way they kind of compensate on this in difficulty is they do kind of mix-ups. So like bosses will show up like there's a problem in this game with reusing bosses,
mm-hmm.
but they will take like two different bosses and juxtapose them. So like I know how to fight the lizard on his own, but if the lizard has Electro with him.
Yeah.
Just pulling a random example that they don't actually do, but they do things like that or mix them up with kind of higher level enemies as well to kind of make that make it feel different. So the game, you have multiple players. The balancing mode for this is that you they just add more enemies.
Okay.
When you have more players. So I think this is actually best to play with one or two people. If you have four people, there are too many enemies on the screen.
So they're way too crowded, way too much of a grind.
Yes. Yeah. There are points, but points are just for bragging rights.
Right.
Like as you when you get to the end of the level, you get a high score, which player has the best score. And that's exclusively so you can say that you kill more enemies than your buddy. You don't get extra lives because, again, you only have one life. Quarters give you 400 health.
Right.
Regardless. So that's all pretty standard. The big gimmick here, though, is that you switch between beat 'em up and platforming levels.
Yeah.
So, similar to that modal degree, like Captain America and the Avengers, this is also like a modal game.
Yeah. I love the way that they accomplish this, because like the beat 'em up section is very zoomed in.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a beat 'em up that plays with zoom the way that this does, the way it reveals the screen, like, and then it pulls out to give you like a platformer size sprite when it asks you to platform, right?
And when you platform, the thing it feels the most like is Strider.
Yeah,
like you can grip onto ceilings, you have angles of walking, like very steep angles to walk up, which feel very Strider like. Mm-hmm. It's really cool.
Yeah,
and this kind of goes hand in hand with the other special thing about this, is that this is an immensely cinematic beat 'em up.
That first fight with Venom, where like end up chasing after him, it's so good.
The first stage, I think, of this is one of the, if not the strongest first stage in a beat 'em up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think this is better than Shadows of Mystara,
right?
But I think that the first stage of this is so cool,
right?
And you can get through it on a quarter pretty easily. Like if you ever see, and this is kind of a rare machine. I was on the Retronauts about Spider-Man games, and you know, other people in the room had never seen one of these.
Hmm.
If you see this, like, it is definitely worth a quarter just to see the way the first level presents itself.
Yeah, this is the one you played at Quarter World.
No, I play this at Ground Control.
Okay,
I ended up playing Dig Dug at Quarter World because the Dig Dug at Ground Control had a shitty joystick.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So yeah, I forgive them, but it was a little bit annoying. So this I play at Ground Control, and the next game I have my final game I did at Ground Control.
Okay.
So this is that first stage. Like, I've kind of got detailed notes that we don't need to go into.
Mm-hmm.
But the other, that cinematic nature actually goes with the flow between levels as well.
Yeah.
So you are on a chase during this, and it, you know, if you end the first level on scaffolding, which you then in the second level get onto a Zeppelin, the Zeppelin then crashes into the Kingpin's lair, and the beginning of that level is the hole that you put in the lair, and you're walking off the Zeppelin. Like, it is one journey.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really cool the way that actually works. So kind of going through the stages, there are four stages. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3 and final stage. The first one is really cool. Like, you start out in a city, as you expect. This like kind of innocuous looking truck drives by along with the scorpion, runs by, and you chase it. The scorpion pops out and you fight the scorpion. And while this is happening, the truck in the background, the panels come down and you see that's transporting Eddie Brock and a bunch of science shit.
Nice.
And he gets venomed up and he joins the boss fight, like the gargoyles, you know, in Dark Souls. Like, he comes up partway through the boss fight.
Yeah.
Really, really fantastic. You go past there's also a gigantic billboard for Namor Cola,
which I was trying
to find Namor Cola, like just a gif of Namor Cola. I was like, is it made of salt water or something? But when you go there, you switch to your platforming section. After you do a little bit of platforming, you fight a gigantic Venom. So you, mm-hmm. they do boss fights in the platforming mode as well, which is really cool. Like, he's going around smashing down scaffolding. You're jumping from piece of scaffolding to scaffolding trying to hit him.
Mm-hmm. Like, he's like two stories high. So like, if you if you're playing with a bunch of people, you're like, hey, you take high, I take low.
Yeah. Yep. And it's a little bit inelegant. Like, when he overlaps with you, you'll just kind of get hurt until you bounce out of him.
Right.
You know, he does contact damage in a way that like is, you know, mildly frustrating, I guess. But mm-hmm. Just the scale is really, really cool.
Yeah.
The idea of you fight a normal Venom and then you fight this gigantic Venom and then you go back to a normal Venom at the end.
Yeah.
And all this is you're chasing this mystic power stone kind of thing. So that's kind of the MacGuffin. And Spidey and his friends are trying to figure out who is behind all of this chaos.
Right.
The story stuff is very minimal. The second level is largely on scaffolding and a Zeppelin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you fight, you get on this blimp, you fight, the lizard shows up. You fight, the worst boss in this is in this level, which is the Green Goblin.
Ugh. So he's kind of like flies around and you can't really hit him. Yeah.
He does a lot of bombing runs. Like, you have to kind of jump kick him. He'll slow down at points for you to hurt him, but he does a lot of bombing runs and it's just very easy to get blown up. Like, the Green Goblin has been hard to adapt to video games.
Yeah.
Or, for Spider-Man things, I think largely because he is so mobile
mm-hmm.
and so powerful. But that's primarily, what you do in that. Electro is in there as well. But I think you fight in the side scrolling section.
You do. Electro is pretty neat because like he's entirely ranged and he's all about laying down patterns that you have to avoid as you close the distance. Like, Hawkeye is super valuable in that fight.
Yeah. It's kind of similar. You run into Dr. Octopus, who does kind of similar things. Like when you fight bosses in platforming mode, they tend to be more about area control and area denial.
Mm-hmm.
So this blimp crashes into the Kingpin's lair, which is a casino. Yeah. You go into the lair until you find his secret lab. It's really neat. Like it just feels like you are, making a journey.
Mm-hmm.
This is where you fight Dr. Octopus in the side scrolling segment. Like he kind of spreads his arms out and does that area denial.
Yeah.
Through there.
It's very funny how Kingpin, like all of his guys are like really fat. Like he can't have any skinny guys around to provide contrast.
Well, he's got a couple of skinny guys who look like they're from the Smooth Criminal video. Like he's got a couple like Michael Jackson Moonwalker buddies going out with him, but he also has some other fat guys. Like it's weird. You in the street you fight like agents who look like they're from the Hellfire Club,
mm-hmm.
but then eventually it just opens up to like beat him up. You know, here's a guy with a mohawk. Here's a fat guy with a vest.
Yeah, you're just some 80s punks from like one of the later Death Wish movies.
I love those as enemies. Like very funny. You fight Kingpin. He just has kind of a charge attack. Like most of the bosses other than Green Goblin do kind of just have normal kind of punch kick combos and then also have like a charge or a ranged attack.
Yeah.
Like the lizard does like a tail whip kind of thing. Again, there's a couple things that are a little bit different than that. I think this is the level or it's in the next one. No, it happens here where you fight Sandman.
Yeah.
So Sandman, his whole thing is that he can kind of travel through the ground like a land shark. And ambush you.
Right.
Like he pops out of the ground and hits you. So he's kind of cheap as well.
Yeah. He'll send like uppercuts to the ground too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit annoying, but he's at least a little bit different.
Yeah.
Then you fight the Hobgoblin, which sucks because like I don't like the Hobgoblin anyway.
Nah.
Too many gobs. There's a demigoblin too. We just went through this on Days of Future Cast, but there's, TM gobs. but you eventually get there and you decide like, oh, maybe it's Dr. Doom. So you take a helicopter, you chased the Kingpin to his helicopter, you eventually get on it, disable it, and it crashes in Latveria, mm-hmm. which is called Latvelia in this. It's real weird. Like this is where they're really, really piling on repeated boss fights. They want your quarters in this stage. Like the game is pretty fair. It's not like you get up to this point with one quarter or anything, but this is where they really start putting on the pressure.
Yeah.
Fight a bunch of weird manimals. These weird like ape human hybrids.
Yeah.
If there's something from Marvel, I don't know what they are. And then you fight Dr. Doom a couple times. Of course, one time he's a Doombot. The second time he is in like a Dr. Wily-esque UFO.
Okay.
That he floats around. And then you fight him as a Doombot again, or as Dr. Doom. And then the final time they use the stone and their technology for a really, really cool final boss fight. If you play with just one player, you fight three Venoms at once.
Oh,
and they fall from the sky as kind of globs that then turn into Venom. The number of Venoms you fight scales to the number of players. So I went online and watched it with four players, and it just kind of Venoms raining from the sky. Like kind of Venoms just kind of keep coming.
Yeah, I'm
and
watching
it's a
that
really
now.
excellent visual.
Mm-hmm.
Like it looks really, really neat.
Yeah, well, like it drops as symbiote goo. Then it reconstitutes into our good old toothy tongue boy.
Yep. Yeah, way into it. Like it looks really, really neat. And Venom is not like the end boss of this is actually not that hard. Like it's not nearly as hard as the goblins.
Yeah,
it's annoying to fight three guys at once, but you can manage them. I found that I could manage them all right.
Yeah.
So this and then at the end you watch the Sovereign Nation burn.
Yep.
As American citizens who went in and overthrew a country.
Yep.
you then watch the castle burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. It truly was a 2006 secret war. But yeah, this is a really good game. This is a great beat 'em up, and it is a bummer that so few people have played it.
Yeah, like it is not proliferated at all. Like you said, it's never been ported to anything. It sticks out like a sore thumb. Like if you're walking if you're walking down a row of these beat 'em ups specifically because of the sprite design. And it's super fun to play. it is a little bit of a bummer that you are playing as Spider-Man, but there's no swinging. Like to me, that is the operative verb of Spider-Man-ness.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to fit that well into like a beat 'em up kind of context. But the game isn't designed around that limitation or that expectation, right?
Even in the beat 'em ups where he does more swinging, like even, you know, in the Genesis one.
Yeah,
the Genesis ones and such, like it still becomes a minor part of what he is. Like Spider-Man has a suspiciously good track record of video games. Like I think there are more good Spider-Man video games than bad.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't truly get kind of amazing until Spider-Man 2.
Right.
You know, which see whatever episode of WoF that is.
Yeah.
But the, you know, it's still fun to have him in this, and it's fun to play with these oddballs. Like it's fun to play with Hawkeye and Namor and like Black Cat, who doesn't end up in games very often,
right,
and is a cool character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a cool cast and just very visually attractive, very cinematic presentation. Like I'd recommend if you can't, you know, if you see this, obviously put a quarter, but it's also probably worth like maiming just to check out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause you probably can't find it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also it has one of my favorite, sound effects or visualized sound effects. When Spider-Man shoots his web, it goes thwip.
Yeah. 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 this does a lot of those. Everyone says sweet dreams when you finish a combo.
Yeah.
Every single person. So like, you know, Namor and his famous catchphrase,
sweet dreams,
sweet dreams.
Namor and his famous catchphrase, oh, none of you know who I am.
Yeah. Yep.
So my third and final game is Area 51.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not. So I didn't really pick this because I have a lot of affection for it. This is more of a, again, more SEO. So this was released by Mesa Logic and Atari in 1995. I played this one up at the Arcade Legacy in the Cincinnati Mall. That is the big spooky dead mall that I talk about all mm-hmm. the time. I have a link in there for you, Gary. There's a video as well showing some of the sights and sounds there. Go ahead.
No, nothing. The guy who does this these dead mall videos, I follow on YouTube. Oh, I haven't seen the specific dead mall, but I watch a lot of dead malls.
Yeah. To take a look there. It's it is something to behold. But like I said, you know, it's not really like that fantastic of a game, but it was everywhere. Like this was something that achieved saturation like in the corners of bars all over the place. And I wanted to play a light gun game. You know, that is something that, you know, did come home like in the Saturn and PlayStation era, but also in the Wii era specifically. You know, it really is, you know, very much an arcade kind of experience. And I think that a lot of people, like everybody's played Area 51. So,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are a member of Star, not Stars, but Star.
Star.
There are two A's, and you are attempting to contain this alien outbreak that happened at the Area 51 military base in Nevada. Rather, this probe landed and started like transforming everybody. And this is a pretty stock standard kind of light gun game. You have a panic button. In the form of these grenades that you can deploy by shooting the grenade icon at the bottom of the screen.
Sure.
Yeah, like you do. you also get ammo and gun upgrades, which go away when you take damage. These are actually pretty great. Like they take you from your regular pistol to like an expanded magazine one up to like auto fire, which will just play havoc with your accuracy rating. Up to like a regular shotgun and then an automatic shotgun, and those shotguns have really wide kind of spray patterns, and it's kind of like easy mode because you barely have to aim. And it's been a very long time since I played a light gun game. Man, it is super satisfying just to like, okay, you know, camera moves, boom, here are a bunch of enemies, pow 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 pow, they're down, right?
Yeah.
Like I felt pretty good, you know, by the end of this, I felt pretty good about my aiming abilities. Like that is something that, you know, you kind of take to like, it's like riding a bike, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, like there's no real defensive vocabulary. Like every light gun game, this is a way, you know, like that is a way to just extract more coins from you, throw more enemies, than you can deal with. The only way you can stop yourself from taking damage is to kill enemies before they can hurt you. And the thing that sucks about this is that there are definitely points where if you are playing this by yourself, you know, it is balanced for two people.
Yeah. I found that to be, you know, I did a shooter for my third one. We didn't coordinate that, mm-hmm. which is kind of what happened. And the I find that to be true with most shooters.
Right.
Yeah. Like even just that down to like there are two things that are going to attack you, you know, if you don't get to them in time,
mm-hmm.
and they're, you know, they both trigger at once.
Right.
Like, you know, my crosshair cannot be in two places at once, period.
Right. No matter how fast I am at, you know, shooting a bunch of stuff, like, you know, you can only reload so quickly, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, in this one, like, there are just points where it's like, hey, here are a bunch of purple enemies that are bullet sponges anyway, that are going to be throwing, barrels at you. And then also a bunch of, like, just kind of like regular mooks in the foreground who are going to attack you. So yeah. You have to not only shoot the barrels out of the air, but shoot the guys who are going to attack you in the foreground, and then also deal enough damage to take out the purple guys in the background. Like, that is just a regular, like, oh, we've decided we need more money, so here's this encounter again.
Yeah. And these games were early interface draws, so they could do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was just like, oh, the novelty of having a plastic machine gun,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I can do this on is enough that, like, you know, I will put in 50 cents into this over and over because I like shooting a fake gun.
Right.
Because I'm a big, big man. I want to feel like a big man.
I'm a big man. Yeah.
I'm big, big man. Guns in my area.
I got Oaxaca. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you'd want to do that, play with this fake gun. So they could just get you that way.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and this, like, so weirdly enough, like, light guns were, you know, a mainstay of, you know, like, it was on the Odyssey, right? You know, you had these at home, you had the Zapper with the NES. You know, this feels kind of not early on, but it feels still relatively in the formative years of light gun games. Like, before this, the big one that I know of is, like, Lethal Enforcers, right?
Yeah.
You know, that is kind of in the same vein. All of that, you know, like that does have the Mortal Kombat kind of digitization. Area 51 was especially attractive because it did have kind of this hybrid version of, like, 3D and, you know, photorealistic kind of, you know, digitized actor kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was, you know, part of the reason. It looks super dated now, but at the time I remember it being, like, just the height, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and when you say early, like, light gun, it's like I feel like there are different kinds of phases.
Yeah.
Of light gun games, like, there's, you know, the initial, like, skeet shooting, you know, duck hunt style mm-hmm. thing, and then there is the police trainer virtua cop phase.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then there is this, which is like the trash aesthetic.
Yeah.
Ones, like House of the Dead, this, like, just ugly and dark in a way that's kind of glorious.
Yes.
You know, and just like, because this is not an attractive game.
No.
Like the way that it's set up is appealing and looks cool in a way that it has aged like milk.
Yeah.
You know, like I played a lot of Area 51 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just it's funny. It's like a B movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny in that sense.
Stay low.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of encouraged to shoot the scenery because you're going to get, like, these bonus stages that pop up that have kind of like a shooting gallery kind of aesthetic. Man, I really wish that there was a point blank machine around here because that is my light gun shooter of choice. Speaking of Carnival Games. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also you've got your other star members running around. You want to avoid, you know, friendly fire, right?
Yeah.
They're going to be, like, right in your way. They're going to jump right in front of you,
which is, like, super, super frustrating. That was a huge problem with the game that I did.
Yeah. So the hardware for this is pretty interesting. I just, you know, doing research, I had no idea that, like, this was as kind of advanced for the time as it was. They initially wanted it to run off of a CD, almost like a, you know, like a laser disc, but just, yeah, we're going to compress everything to fit so it can stream off of a CD in, you know, relative time, but it wouldn't give them the speed or quality that they wanted. So instead, every Area 51 machine is a modified Jaguar with a hard drive. So everything you're seeing, like all the video and stuff, is running off of, you know, a video game system with a hard drive back when that just didn't happen. It was either a cartridge or it was a CD or nothing.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That makes me want to, because I've always wanted to own an arcade machine.
Uh-huh.
And I will idly look at Craigslist with some frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And by far the most frequent one I see for sale is Area 51.
Yes.
So that makes me think, like, if I, you know, one of these things, it's like $100 or best offer, like, worst case scenario, I get to open it up and get a weird Jaguar.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know how portable it is, though. What would you do with that if you were able to get it out? What would you do with that turtle treasure, Gary?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just like it would be the most turtle treasures, it's the killing of the turtle that's the pleasurable part, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's really just like the journey. Yeah. The destination is what you want in turtle treasure.
It's just the cracking open. Well, what I thought you were going to say was, well, $100 or best offer. Well, at the very least, I have this super inconvenient and heavy thing that is taking up a bunch of room in my house.
It's the case for my Jaguar.
Yeah.
it's on a dolly.
Yeah,
it's my portable Jaguar.
Yeah. The levels of the game, I forget how many of them there are. They flow very seamlessly between each other. They're really just like interstitials to show your score and your accuracy percentage. This is like weirdly a combo based game. Like it is really kind of counting how many enemies you can hit between your misses, which is kind of a mainstay of the genre. You start out kind of outside the base, you know, shooting helicopters and fighting your way into the inner labs. However, there is this really kind of gooey caramel middle of this game where you're just like in garages and offices. Like this is this is a Special Forces shoot up an office simulator.
Yeah, so some real that era Siphon Filter-esque level design.
Yep.
It makes sense because that's what Area 51 is.
Yeah.
It's just like a hangar on a complex, so you're not going to get anything too exciting there. But, you know, Area 51 sounds very exciting until you realize, like, actually it's just a military installation.
Yeah.
So it probably looks like that.
Yeah. The heroes of NASA's ground team. And here's Cheryl from HR. Woo! Yeah. The final boss of this is a flying saucer that rotates around. You have to shoot all the parts off of it while you're swarmed by these foot soldiers. There's not an awful lot of like variants in the enemies. You have like the zombies that go down in one, the foot soldier aliens, which go down in one. The purple variants are always the ones that like basically feel like House of the Dead enemies. You have to just kind of like plunk them several times before they go down. Some of them have, you know, different kinds of projectile weapons, but mostly you're just kind of popping things as soon as they pop up.
Mm.
Yeah. This was ported. Like I said, this is part of that wave of Light Gun games that got home ports on, I believe the Saturn and the PlayStation. Weirdly, this got a PC port. I had a friend in grade school who just loved this game, but he never played it at the arcade. He liked playing it on his PC because he was able to be good at it because it is basically a mousing tutorial.
Yeah. Light game. Same thing if you emulate. Uh-huh. Like MAME, you can switch your mouse out for a light gun, and it's very strange.
Yeah. Yep, but Area 51, like, it is a super trashy game that you could play everywhere, but it is also, like, a functional basic light gun shooter that had this cultural moment, right? And then, you know, is littering Craigslist across the nation.
I always feel like it's a good game, like, if you just want to shoot, like, since it is everywhere, like, I just want to do a gun game.
Yep.
And then, you know, then it is fun, but it's never going to be my first choice.
No. I'm going to go for either a Point Blank if they have it or a House of the Dead. If I'm going to go full on like trash aesthetic, right?
Yeah, I guess, you know, like I might want to play it more than like Revolution X or Terminator 2.
Yeah. Well, Terminator 2 is like a different kind of thing. Like that's just a barely disguised mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not a particularly good game.
Oh man, I almost did Carnival for this, but Area 51 like very narrowly edged it out.
Also pretty trashy.
Yep.
The final thing that I played was a shooting game, and this is going to be the quickest of my things because there's not a whole lot to say.
This is bad, Gary. This is so bad.
It's really bad. Aliens Extermination, which is a 2006 gun game built by Global VR, the team you've come to know and trust. This is a, like, you can tell that this is not going to be good because it's like a successor side story to Aliens 3, where a couple colonial marine squads are sent to destroy Hadley's Hope, Or okay. sent to Hadley's Hope to exterminate the alien presence.
Right, right. And the actual Aliens 3 arcade game is not very good.
No. And I'm even like, I don't think Aliens 3 is good. Yeah. But I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it is.
Right.
Like, there are things to like about it.
Well, it's not
like,
a war crime. Yeah.
It's not a war crime. You know, but it's also like we're on the cusp of like it's secretly good, you know, people being that. And I think that's true too. Like, we just let something exist as kind of bad, but not, you know, as bad as everyone says.
Right.
You know, it doesn't have to get shunted into good.
Right. Right. It can still be bad. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It just yeah. So this is a terrible shooting game. It is an excruciating quarter muncher.
Hey, Gary, I about called you Gory. Hey, Gary, do you like hallways?
Yeah. You spend a lot of time in hallways, a lot of time in kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's 50 cents a play. Like it's 2006, so it's more than 10 years old, but it's still like kind of has a prestige look to it.
It's like a gigantic cabinet. The thing that is most attractive to it is that you do play this with what looks like an Alien's pulse rifle.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
So this game has very good kinesthetics.
Yeah.
Like you play with the pulse rifle, it sounds and looks like the pulse rifle.
It'll make your arms real numb.
Yeah, it vibrates like that. You know, that part is very fun, actually. Yeah. Like, I love this interface as a thing. I just wish they put it in a better game.
Right.
You know, so it's I can't really talk about the individual levels. The levels aren't really, you know, it has an anti-sense of continuity. It's like you go, it's like Bug Hunt, Satellite Uplink. Like you just choose something like that. And then go through these zones. And mostly hallways. Sometimes there's like kind of a nice sense of place. Like you'll be in, like you go through the kitchen or you go through the medical wing or something.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's like hallways and blasted hellscapes outside.
Yeah. Yeah. Weirdly enough, this is a first person shooter, not first person. It's a light gun game that has an ammo system to it, which is fucking unacceptable.
So the way that works is really interesting, but bad.
Yeah.
So like a lot of times shooters have a reload mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
This one, you have an ammo system. You have 99 bullets because that's how much the pulse rifle has. Everyone knows it.
Right.
And then you the same way in other games where you would shoot like a little shotgun shell and then you'd have a shotgun for a clip.
Mm-hmm.
You do that to refill your ammo. And you might be thinking like, how can you play a shooter if you can run out of ammo? And the answer is you can't. It makes your gun just trickle out bullets.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense. Like, it's like I still have some in there, but they're just rattling around. I just gotta shake it.
Yeah. Like, it turns it from full auto into semi auto. Like, it has to be like you press good.
It's not even semi auto. It doesn't go that quick.
Yeah.
Like, it does not fire as fast as you can hold the trigger.
Yeah.
And that is not enough. Enemies do not take enough stagger damage.
I lost bullet pressure.
That's exactly what it is. It's like you're in, it's like a bad hotel shower. You know, like so you have to constantly be on the lookout for these ammo pickups, which is an interesting idea that I've never seen before.
Right.
It doesn't work at all because it's a rail shooter.
Right.
Like you're not exploring. Like this would work in a survival, you know, if I was controlling my locomotion. But what happens is I get to the end of the hallway, the camera just swings to look over in an area and there's a bit of ammo there I get to see for like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it swaps back to my main. And if you miss that, well, next little stretch, no ammo for you, partner. Yeah.
No, we're going to throw the same swarm of xenomorphs at you.
And the way that xenomorphs are handled in video games that are not Alien Isolation in general is kind of shitty, because they just run at me and just stand in front of me and try to claw me. You know, this thing is supposed to be like this sophisticated kind of hunter, this predator.
I've had a real hard on to do Alien versus Predator 2, if not for Woff, then for X-Crank.
I would be down for that.
That nails it super well.
The alien campaign in that is amazing. Yeah. Like, if people who don't know, like, you go through the entire life cycle. You start as a fucking facehugger.
Yep.
It's incredible. Like, it's super, super cool.
Yeah, the Marine campaign is pretty good, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And specifically, if you're thinking about this, like, it's AVP 2 is the good one.
Yes.
AVP 1 is frustrating.
Yeah.
You know, you're just kind of going through hallways. Aliens are popping out in front of you. If you're actively shooting at them, they do stagger for a second. They can't claw you while they're being shot at.
Uh-huh.
But it feels like it's balanced for two players because oftentimes just two aliens will pop up in front of you.
Right.
And you, while you're shooting one of them, because they're all real bullet spongy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not one shot for any of these things. The other one will just get in its swipes. Like, you have a health meter. You don't die in one hit. Which is kind of good, but you have inevitable damage, so fuck it. you know, who cares? The kind of extra things you have are you have grenades, which are not room clearers. Like they're directional. They cause an explosion at where you aim.
Mm-hmm.
And flamethrower ammo, which is a very powerful attack that has like limited ammo.
Right.
So it allows you to do kind of, like the grenades do big damage. The flamethrower kind of does sustained damage. Both really useful, very necessary for boss fights.
Yeah.
So the again, the kinesthetics holding the gun feels really good. Everything has this kind of atmospheric blue wash to it. And it feels like shitty future the way the aliens do, you know, like those movies do. So I like that part of it.
Yeah.
Just wireframe is bad.
Yeah. The enemy destruction could be kind of nice, but like this is roughly like 5 years after that would have been impressive. Like you are dismantling the aliens as you're shooting at them.
Yes. Yeah. They do take kind of specific damage depending on where they're shot, but not in a way that is usually meaningful. For aliens, you know, shooting them in the head will drop them slightly quicker, but still not totally quick. They can still take many bullets to the head. That only really becomes a thing when you start fighting synths.
Okay.
The fourth stage, there are synths you fight, and they do to go down in one headshot, and that's actually pretty cool because you have a full auto gun, you know, so you can do a lot of headshots at once. When I said earlier this has four levels and you have a select at the beginning, that really signals to me that I played it the wrong way. Like you're not meant to play this in a sitting.
No.
You know, you were supposed to play one of these and then come back and be like, okay, I've already done bug hunt. Now I need to get to do, you know, data extraction.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, whatever the generic name for another one of these is.
Yeah. As much as I'm sad, you know, that you didn't have a good time with this because it's not a good game. Like, I'm also happy that you did dip into specifically like a post 2005, like Sega is like out the game. You know, like you're not getting these weird Dreamcast ports, although this does have the graphics of a Dreamcast game. But like you are in the moments of like, okay, well, who is making new arcade games? It's no name companies that are doing like Fast and Furious licensed like racers.
Yeah. That's what I was going for. And that's honestly why I chose this one. I had no affection for it. I'd never really played it.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of good aliens shooters like this. Like there's a newer one than this that's actually really fun and cool looking.
Nice.
You know, it was $1 a play, so I was like, I can't really justify that. One of the things that's kind of good about this, again, in saying a nice thing about it is the bosses are a little bit interesting.
Okay.
They codify through visual language the stagger. So a boss will have a health bar by them, and then under it they'll have a bar marked attack. And as you drain the health, you drain the attack bar slower or quicker, rather.
Okay.
And that's like the countdown. If that attack bar stays up long enough, then it will get in the attack on you. But if you can sustain fire long enough on it, then if you drain that bar, it will stagger him and then you can get in some more damage and then it starts again.
Hmm.
So for a bullet spongy boss, like he doesn't just like quite literally just stand there, accept bullets and punch you in the face. Like,
right. Well, it'll just really punch you on a timer. Like, okay. Well, you're just going to take the like X amount of damage over Y amount of time. Like you have control.
You have a degree of control. This, it falls down because you have to still re-up your ammo, you know? So it might take half a clip to drain that attack meter. And you know, you have to be constantly searching for ammo and there's lots of ads. The final boss of this is a flying alien, like a big alien with bat wings. And you have to be very cognizant of, you know, different critters around and picking up ammo constantly.
Yeah.
During the fight, you know, and it's a bummer because there's interesting things about some of what they're trying to do, but it feels like it feels to me like when you ask whether you could rather than whether you should, you know, like having that limited ammo thing, like they're just like, oh, there's never been a rail shooter with limited ammo. And well, like, we can do that.
Yeah, sure.
Like, well, you could. Like, there hasn't been. Like, I don't think that's a thing.
Well, there might be a reason.
exactly.
Like this would be a thing that would be ironed out in like early prototyping.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, that sucks because like, you know, the there is potential for this to be good, you know, to become a good game. And I don't know, like I've never played that newer one that's fun, but like, I kind of want to seek it out. Like I want to see if it's, you know, even if it is $1 a play, like when I'm not operating under network budget, when I'm operating under a coal budget, like I would like to put, you know, $5 into that and see how far I can get.
Yeah, it's much more fun, especially if you have somebody there. And this one would have been fun with a buddy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just the same way co-op makes everything fun.
Right.
Yeah, it just ended up being a bummer. It did make me get Aliens fever a little bit and really want to do Infestation.
Okay.
For the show. So
Infestation or Isolation?
Oh, either or. Okay. Because of the two, or I guess AVP 2. Like, yeah. You know, the good Aliens games.
Yeah. What's Infestation?
That's the DS one. That's a Metroidvania.
Oh shit. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. That's a super good game.
Yeah.
With permadeath for your soldiers.
Uh-huh.
Like that's, I love it.
You have like six dudes and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's like, it's permadeath, but you can find them. Like mm-hmm. you can, if somebody dies, you have to like go find where they're like being implanted with embryos and shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like Left 4 Dead. They're in the closet. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there's consequences. Like you cannot rescue them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't played that since it came out, but yeah. I remember liking it quite a bit.
No, I never beat it. Let's talk.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff like that like is on that to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind fast tracking an Alien game. And I've never played Isolation. I'm nervous about it because like a sustained like being hunted for a whole game.
Seems like that might be really stressful.
It might be a lot for me. Yeah, like yeah.
It's also way too long. I'd rather do AVP2 if I'm being honest with you.
I bet you AVP2 is long too, but it would still be like that's broken up into campaigns in a way where if we wanted to split it up into episodes, we really easily could.
Yeah, and all three, like, so I think AVP2 is like it's like right on the edge. It's like a 15-hour game, but like it's broken up into those three campaigns and all of them play so differently. Like the Predator in that, like, you know, we heaped a lot of sugar on the other two. Like the Predator is no slouch either.
Yeah, the Predator is cool. Yeah, those games are really good. Yeah. Like I am extremely into AVP. I mean, specifically two. Like one I thought I would like, and then the maze levels killed me. It's like Thief 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, AVP2 is really cool.
I put so much time into AVP2's multiplayer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool to do an asymmetrical multiplayer
mm-hmm.
in that era.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it is, right? Like, am I misremembering that?
No. That's absolutely. I mean, just the instant kill, like, stealth demand that is placed on the Xenomorphs, like, against the, like, being placed against the kind of also methodical play of the Predators, and then the spray and pray of the Marines. Like when you have all three of those going at once, like it is you don't know what you're looking for. It is a very confusing, very stressful multiplayer experience.
I know that I'm not the first person to make this observation, but it's pretty rad that we, because of StarCraft, we more or less got an RTS version of that too.
Yep.
You know, like that's, you know, those map on directly to StarCraft.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So but that is neither. That's not about arcades.
Nope.
Is there anything else, any other like arcade kind of wrap 'em ups? Like there's one other game I want to mention.
Okay.
That I couldn't play cause I didn't bring anybody here, but they had, Panic Park.
You know, oh, Panic Park? I've never played Panic Park. What is that?
It is a very cartoony, I think it's a Namco game.
Uh-huh.
Very arcadey, kind of like romance, like date game.
Okay.
Where the interface is too, Panic Park Arcade. So I want to make sure I get the developer. It is Namco, 1997. The interface is two kind of like wands. God, it's hard to explain. It's like two handles that have buffers on them that have like cushions.
Okay.
And they're both in one half circle shaped track.
Hmm.
So they can meet at the middle. They can go out to the ends. And you play a series of mini games where you control one and the other person controls the other. And it's all about like playfully controlling that real estate. So like you do a random mini game. Like one time you're both runners and there are obstacles that come at you. Uh-huh. So you have to move your character with this thing, but you can't move into the other person's space. And if you hit their wand or hit their handle, you can knock them into things.
Huh.
It's a really interesting game, like with a really like great kind of bespoke interface, but you just can't play with one player.
Yeah, it's like an ongoing kind of like co-op compromise about physical space.
Yes, you know, in a cute kind of like fun way, like the way that it works, it's like I can't imagine being mad about Panic Park.
Right.
You know, it's like a series of party games almost, mm-hmm. but they are all, you know, very light spirited and fun.
Yeah. The way you were describing that, I almost said like, oh, it's like The Act.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I took a notebook to the arcade, but that is over in my backpack. Can I go grab that so I can remember the titles of these things that I played? I'll be right back. Yeah. So I played a couple games that I hadn't seen before. Most of this is really just kind of like novelty. Like, have you ever played Punk Shot?
Punk Shot.
Punk Shot. So this is a Konami game that is a combination beat 'em up slash NBA Jam style basketball game.
Never heard of Punk Shot.
I know. I saw this at Arcade Legacy and I was like, what?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's not incredibly good, but like literally for a game from like 1994, for me to have not heard of it, you know, I'm not like entirely plugged in, but I just, I didn't expect to see a novelty, you know, from that era.
This is ugly.
It is so ugly.
Yeah.
It is like a higher resolution Skate or Die almost.
Yeah. These proportions. Not good.
No.
The Ramblers versus the Slammers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, it's not great.
Doesn't
look great. However, like I like a basketball game, especially like an NBA Jam style arcade basketball game.
Yeah. And if you can punch people.
Yep.
Why not do it?
Yeah. Throw elbows, man. Yeah. I already talked about Saddle and Scope. Have you played Holoseum?
I feel like I have played Holoseum. Actually,
it is not a fun game. It is a super cool gimmick. But as a fighting game, it is one of the most basic and restrictive I've played outside of like Tongue of the Fat Man.
Yeah. I have played that before.
Yeah.
I just pulling stuff up.
Yeah. The idea being that like, you know, you're two people fighting, but it is presented graphically as like a hologram that like sticks up 90 degrees from the display you look at.
Yeah. That's visually kind of neat, but not good.
Right.
As a thing.
Yeah. When I went to Arcade Legacy Newport, that's where I played Tron, but also like I just indulged in a bunch of nostalgia. So like, Daytona USA, Hydro Thunder, Crazy Taxi, like that's where all the racing games were. Did Blastroids. That's a fun game. We talked about that in the first arcade, episode, but, Blastroids is super good. It doesn't have the attraction that a vector version, you know, like Vector Asteroids has, but like it adds like, you know, you can switch between different kinds of ships if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then Klax. And Klax is always Klax. I like Klax a lot.
And Klax can suck my dick.
What? You don't like Klax?
Yeah, not really.
Okay.
I don't think Klax is a very good puzzle game. Like, I think it's really boring and slow.
I like Klax a lot.
Yeah, I think it's no mean bean machine, and okay. It's no, definitely no Tetris.
Oh, I mean, nothing is Tetris. That's an unfair standard, Gary.
But some things can at least be Puyo Pop, and it's not Puyo Pop.
Yeah, I like Klax a lot.
There are Klax defenders.
Yeah,
it's a weird thing, but definitely like there are definitely Klax. It's like I put that on about the same level as like Yoshi's Cookie.
Oh man, that is so unfair. Come on.
Unfair. It is unjust. chain thyself to this Klax. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's weirdly like programming. Like you take the input and you have to like map the output to make the patterns you want.
Yeah. Like how Yoshi takes the input of a cookie.
Yeah.
And maps it onto the output of the
which is shit like that game is, which is unlike Klax.
This is perhaps the most spirited defense of Klax what has been. Like I'm sure that some people are gonna write in and be like, oh man, I like Klax too.
Yeah.
You know, but I just it's not like I think that you're not alone, but there aren't that many people really with you on this Klax thing, man.
Yeah, I like Klax a lot.
could be wrong about that. Well, I mean, you were a Sega Trash kid, so it was what you guys had instead of Tetris.
Jesus, come on. I was a Sega Trash kid, but I had a fucking Game Boy. I wasn't an animal.
But that's what I mean. Most of the people I know who have anything positive to say about Klax, it's like it was one of, you know, I think that was like an early Genesis game. When there weren't tons of, it was a pre-Sonic Genesis game.
No, you're talking about columns, man. I'm talking about Klax, like where you had the stuff on the conveyor belt.
No, I know what I'm talking about. There is a Klax, like Sega Genesis port, though. Huh. I'm like 90% sure that was in that Altered Beast to Sonic corridor.
Hmm.
Like, I'm not a big fan of columns either, man. Like, don't get me started on columns.
No, columns is bullshit, but Klax is, I like Klax. Come on.
Mm. Yeah,
they had like goal based stages. Like it wasn't just like making your combos, but it was like make this make X number of these specific ones.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take it back. Like Klax could not literally suck my dick. Clax can go for a walk.
Okay, there we go.
I'll downgrade it to the Clax go for a walk. I take five, Clax.
Take five. You've earned it.
Take five, Clax. But Columns is worse.
Yeah,
we can all agree at least Columns is trash.
Yeah, Columns is third rate, and they really tried to force Columns down our throat. Like, they would just give that away with other games.
Yeah, they really wanted kids like Columns.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad.
You play anything else?
A little bit. Like, I played, I was going to do Ninja Baseball Batman for this, but I want to save that because I think we could do an episode on it.
Oh, for sure.
Because it's weird and cool. So I played a little bit of that, and I played some Theater of Magic and Mario Kart, as I mentioned. And yeah. I played, there's kind of a couple neat novelties in Quarter World. Mm-hmm. This was during my Quarter World day. Because I already started Dig Dug, and I just had to finish Dig Dug, and I didn't have anything else I was playing there.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have the bespoke, like, Wreck-It Ralph cabinet of the
Fix It Felix, yeah.
Yeah, so they have a Fix It Felix cabinet there, which is pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's novel and fun.
Does Quarter World still have the Donkey Kong variant where you play as Pauline?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yep. Which I also appreciate. I ended up playing, like, kind of a weird amount of the Super Mario Brothers arcade game.
Okay, yeah.
Just because I was like, I haven't played Mario 1 in a really long time, like, and this is kind of a fun, weird environment for it.
Okay, yeah.
And just, it's really alien to play a Mario game with a joystick.
It really is.
I guess that was a port. Like, people played it that way, but it just felt very strange. And the art on the side is very strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mostly just did that for surrealism purposes.
Yeah, I don't know, like, if, you know, this could just be entirely, like, weird cognitive biases, but, like, the acceleration and just kind of all the momentum feels off in the arcade version of that game.
Yeah. It's just a little bit strange. And it was it was a mono cabinet, because I'm used to that being paired in a cocktail with Goonies.
Yeah.
That was at the Pizza Hut in Aurora, Illinois. They had that. And that's how I played Goonies 1.
Yeah.
Tons. And I was looking for that. That was actually going to be a game that I was going to do for this.
Goonies?
Like, the first Goonies. Like,
I mean, wasn't that just, like, part of a Play Choice 10?
Mm-mm. No. There was a duo cabinet with Super Mario Brothers.
Okay.
And I feel like I've seen standalone Goonies as well.
Weird.
I played Goonies in the arcades multiple times, but, like, that's a weird, cool game.
Yeah, they had a standalone Super Mario arcade game at the Walmart that was nearest the trailer that we had up at Lake Erie.
Mm.
Yeah, that's where I played the most of that and learned how weird and wrong it felt.
I played a little bit of, because we'll never do it for the show. But they did a little bit of the Battletoads arcade game, which is extremely difficult and unfair, but
yeah,
looks good.
Yeah, I always lump that in with Bucky O'Hare, but at least Bucky O'Hare has that weird pie chart button configuration.
Yeah. And it's just a little less unfair.
Yeah.
Than the Battletoads, and they also have the Super Nintendo, like, Play Choice 3.
Yeah.
At Quarter World, so I played a little bit of that, like, just like, because an arcade setting is about how much F-Zero I want to play.
Yep.
So, to a quarter worth of F-Zero is enough F-Zero for me.
Yeah, like, I'll do that as a warm-up on my SNES Classic as I'm getting ready to do some Kirby's Dream Course, which is an amazing game.
Yeah.
You mentioned Theater of Magic, but I didn't think we were doing pinball. Arcade Legacy Newport had a pinball machine I've never played. The Super Mario pinball machine, have you ever played that?
No.
It's very strange. It's based off of Super Mario World, and it is, you know, like, one of the earliest pinball games I played that has, like, a mission select.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That would be attractive. Like, I could see getting down with that.
Yeah. But it has, like, a little mechanical Yoshi inside of it. It is a very strange thing that I did not know existed.
No, I didn't know either. That sounds great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a bunch of arcade games there. There's a cool, like, 90s X-Men one I wanted to play too, but I didn't. Because they were always packed, because pinball, ridiculous pinball town.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be like we're mentioning all these other games that we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that we could do another episode like this in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it would be, I mean, people let us know, like, if this was excruciating and shitty, if you didn't like it, let us know. But I just, like, it's just I sometimes get nervous just thinking about, like, oh, there's just, like, you know, I want to build my little MAME controller because there's just a bunch of games that I haven't played, like, even seeing that basketball game, like, that's an interesting oddity.
Yeah.
If that had been on Nintendo, I definitely would have chosen it from a ROM list and just parted around with it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
There's a lot out there.
This has been a lot of fun. I was super happy to go to these places. Like, I'd been to 16-bit, I'd been to the Arcade Legacy at the Dead Mall, but I never went to the one at Newport. And, like, you know, I could see myself going to all these places places again, you know, not on a mission like I was the last time, just to kind of enjoy it and stretch my legs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a fun, good time.
Yeah.
I think. So I'd like to do this again. But let us know. This is kind of an experimental episode, so if you let us know whether you like it.
Please do.
So it's too late for responses.
Yes.
We're going to be recording that very soon. But if you have responses about what we're doing for June, you can definitely hit us up.
Yes. And those games are A Way Out.
Mm-hmm. A Way Out, Magicka.
Magicka. And EDF 4.1.
Yes. Yep. It is Better Together is the theme. This was a Patreon requested, and it is all co-op games.
Yeah.
So getting ready to start Magicka tomorrow.
Nice.
Excited to do so. We have looked a little bit at July, but I don't think we have July totally hammered
down. It is not 100% unlocked. Listen for the listener response episode.
Yes. So that you'll find out next week. Mm-hmm. And we'll get that locked down on our end as well. Mm-hmm. If you have anything to say about anything we're doing in June, though, June 15th is the deadline for that. Please write us at duckfeed.tv/contact.
Yeah.
If you like the show, what can they do, Cole?
Well, we would really appreciate ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Mm-hmm. That helps raise the visibility of the show. The way that affects our rankings is by velocity. So it's not just like the total number, but like the number that we have in a certain small amount of time. So if all of you who listened to this episode the week that it comes out who hadn't reviewed just went and reviewed it, you would actually like rocket us up, and like people would see us on the top list and, you know, start subscribing and listening. Like, that is a real effective way to spread the word, even though it feels like you are just logging into a shitty service and writing some text. It does make a difference, I assure you.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, it is. You know, we understand people hear about us from that, you know, so we know that works.
Yes.
You know, so please do that. The other thing you can do is obviously support us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv, mm-hmm. That is a huge help. Just, you know, people have been killing it. People have been very generous. It's awesome. But just, you know, a little bit of money makes a big difference. So absolutely. $1 or $2, you get some cool stuff. You can check out everything we have on offer there.
Yeah. This is both Gary and I's full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. And, we can only do that because people, support us.
Yeah.
So if you like the show, please consider it, you know, and if you don't like the show, you made it to the end of the show somehow.
Like, thank you.
There's a whole lot of show that came before this.
Yeah. And, thank you for giving us a shot.
Yeah. Thanks for giving us a shot. Or if this is your, like, you don't like the show and you've been listening to the whole thing, that's weird. Until next time, what should they watch out for, Cole?
They should watch out for The Froggy's Lament.
There we go.
Yeah.
There's some game with fire, but I couldn't think of one either.
Yeah. What, like Star Fox, but like Solar Fox, Phoenix, something like that. Yeah.
Star Fox is an arcade game, right? Yeah, I don't know. There's something in there.
No.
A better sign off, write us at. No, The Froggy's Lament is fine.
Yeah.